daddy's judges came through and they appointed me the president with no precedent. Pennsylvania Avenue resident. So I entered a world that was full of complexity, far too much for me. I never got beyond dichotomy. How ironic it was that I would lead a democracy without diplomacy, in many ways an aristocracy. At 9 p.m. I go to sleep, since questions run too deep for such a simple man. Cheney, please, please tell me what to do. I haven't got a clue now that we've tossed sedan.
Oh, I'm just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm...
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Joining their union brothers and sisters in San Francisco, Chicago, and New York, more than 10,000 casino employees in Atlantic City are on strike. Members of Unite Here, Local 54, including baggage handlers, cocktail servers, bell captains, housekeepers, and others, walked off the job last week, forming around-the-clock picket lines along the Pacific Avenue Strip. Their contract expired 2 weeks ago, and the union has been unable to reach an agreement with management on keeping health care premiums low, stopping outsourcing, and establishing a contract length of 3 years. Trump Hotel Hotels and casino resorts averted a strike at its three Atlantic City casinos by settling with the union early. This helped Sands Hotel Casino, which signed a Me Too agreement, under which it would accept the first contract language reached. Union iron workers stood in solidarity with hotel workers by refusing to cross a picket line outside the Ocean One Pier Hotel. Owners announced they would be flying in replacement workers from Chicago and Las Vegas to keep casinos and restaurants open in one of the most densely unionized cities in the country.
Police officials across the country are calling for a backup from the Bush administration, but don't know if their message is getting through. The administration has stopped funding a Clinton-era program to put more than 100,000 officers on the street, calling the program a success. However, police officials have expressed concern that without the funding, they can't meet expectations in a post-September 11th America. Bill Johnson is the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations.
Police officers are being asked to do much more today than they were on September 10th. Police officers have to guard critical infrastructure, communications, bridges, tunnels, waterworks, power supplies, all things that before September 11th we didn't really have to worry that much about.
Johnson said that while funding for some of these new concerns have been set aside through Homeland Security, it just doesn't get the job done.
The dollars are not marked for law enforcement. They are marked for quote-unquote first responders, which is not very well defined. It includes law enforcement and also includes firefighters, ambulance crews, rescue workers, and so on. So you have a smaller pot of money, but more people competing for it.
He adds that with funding for the campaign to put more police on the streets drying up, there is zero new funding being earmarked by the government to allow for any new officers to be hired.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report. The AFL-CIO says under President Bush's plan to privatize Social Security, Wall Street financial giants would reap $940 billion over 75 years, while retiring workers would see Social Security benefits fall. That's according to a University of Chicago study. The report says that workers would lose 20% of their retirement income subsidizing financial fees under the Bush plan.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
When the candidates debate, remember who they're speaking for.
Under George Bush, we get tax breaks for sending jobs overseas.
John Kerry will end those tax breaks and create jobs in America.
Bush's Medicare bill gave us billions.
John Kerry will give everyone access to the same health plan Congress gets.
Bush is allowing us to keep on polluting.
The corporation's choice or the people's choice. MoveOnPack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Time for another Gooberhead Award. Presented periodically to those in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles an hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober is Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire mayor of the Big Apple. His honor was in the national spotlight during August's Republican National Convention in New York City, and the glare revealed some very ugly wrinkles inside his soul. Bloomberg showed himself to be stunningly callous to our country's most fundamental liberty, the right to assemble in public and speak out about any and all policies with which we disagree. He used the New York City police as a bludgeon to crack down on dissenters who were engaged in totally lawful protests. Then he asserted that every NYPD officer did a great job. Alex Pincus definitely disagrees. He wasn't even a protester, just a city resident who went out to a deli for some matzo ball soup and innocently walked into a police dragnet that was indiscriminately scooping up hundreds of people. Pincus asked an officer how to get out of the way. He was told, "Follow me," then was grabbed by the cops, handcuffed behind his back, forced to kneel for an hour before being tossed into a filthy makeshift cage topped with razor wire, where he was held for 25 hours without access to a lawyer. Bloomberg's police kept saying to him and all the others, "This is what you get for protesting." Oblivious to America's hard-won constitutional rights, the mayor later admitted that innocents were abused, but the gooberhead blamed the victims. "If you go to where the people are protesting and don't want to be part of the protest," he haughtily sniffed, "you're always going to run the risk that maybe you'll be tied up with it." Yeah, literally tied up. This is Jim Hightower saying, our liberties are not taken from us in one big bang of a coup, but slipped out from under us inch by inch by autocratic goobers like Bloomberg.
Larry King here. You've heard me talk about Ester C. Well, now you can get more from your vitamin E. Introducing the advanced protection of Ester E from the makers of Ester C. Ester E's breakthrough form protects its antioxidant strength until your body is ready to use it. So do what I do and get more from your E. Take new Ester E, E-S-T-E-R-E. Are you getting advanced protection from your vitamin E?
And now, look for new Ester E where fine vitamins are sold.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just from making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, as predicted, it really and truly did turn out.
We meet again at last. The circle is now complete. I am the master.
I told you so. It was absolutely predictable that Dick Cheney was going to do his Darth Vader imitation. And it's really remarkable. Let me just put on my psychotherapist hat for a moment. It's not one that I often wear on the air. For 5 years back in the late 70s, 78 to 83, I was the executive director of a residential treatment facility for severely abused children in New Hampshire, which is still there, the New England Salem Children's Village, and had the opportunity to meet a lot of abusive parents, and many of them were also abusive spouses. And there's this particular profile that you see when these people interact with each other. And it's, I call it the slap-slap kiss-kiss profile. And if you've ever known anybody like this, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If not, you saw an example of it last night in Dick Cheney. It's the attempt to intimidate, or the actual intimidation. I mean, you know, just and very often it's verbal, very often it's emotional. The you know, whack, 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 and then you're very nice. And oddly, when Cheney thanked Edwards for the kind words about his daughter, Edwards did what abused spouses very often do, that, oh, well, thank you for your thanks. You know, I mean, he suddenly was like in sympathy. He was in that emotion, whatever. So the lasting impression that I got out of last night was Dick Cheney as the abuser of the United States, as the guy who is, you know, who is slapping around the United States, who tried to slap around John Edwards, didn't pull it off particularly effectively. Once you look back on it retrospectively, that is, in terms of the facts are pretty clear. As Don Imus said this morning, the vice president spent 90 minutes lying. Slate.com. In tonight's debate, Vice President Dick Cheney made a lot of false and misleading statements about his foreign and defense policies. Right-wing trial lawyer and former congressman Joe Scarborough, now MSNBC commentator. This is Dick Cheney denying that he ever suggested, at this point Scarborough laughs, I can't even say it with a straight face, that Iraq and Al-Qaeda were partners in terror. And then Chris Matthews, of course, saying the only reason we know tonight that the vice president asserted a connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11 was we at NBC dug up the tape. He couldn't dig up the memory. That's a problem. Well, in my mind, I'm sure he knew, and it wasn't even a matter of him knowing, because Cheney obviously had memorized a lot of lines for last night's debate. And I will say, you know, in terms of who was better prepared for the debate, frankly, I think in terms of really well polished one-liners, zingers, and slap you upside the heads, Cheney had a better list of them than Edwards. And yet Edwards, on balance, Edwards just kept coming back to, hey, let's tell the truth. For example, Dick Cheney, every Tuesday, or most Tuesdays, to use his phrase, attends a meeting at the Senate of Republican senators. He has not met the majority of many of the Democratic senators at all. Of course, that's not what he would have you think based on last night when he said,
"Now, in my capacity as vice president, I am the president of the Senate, the presiding officer. I'm up in the Senate most Tuesdays when they're in session. The first time I ever met you was when you walked on the stage tonight."
Well, first of all, he's not up there most Tuesdays when they're in session as the presiding officer of the Senate. He's there for this luncheon with Republican senators. The only time he has to be there as the presiding officer of the Senate is to open and close the block sessions, as it were, and in the event of a tie, to cast a vote. I mean, that's it. So, number one. Number two, here is, from 2 years ago, Dick Cheney meeting John Edwards at the National Prayer Breakfast.
Thank you very much. Congressman Wamp, Senator Edwards.
Senator Edwards.
Friends from across America and distinguished visitors to our country from all over the world. Lynn and I are honored to be with you all this morning.
Yes, yeah, sitting next to John Edwards as he's saying this. So, we had, it was interesting, the continuous spin. Dick Cheney saying, no, I never said there was a connection between Saddam and 9/11. And boy, do we have a collection of those. I mean, he repeatedly, back on December 2nd of 2002, Cheney, his regime has had high-level contacts with al-Qaeda going back a decade and has provided training to al-Qaeda terrorists. Wrong. On January 22nd of this year, I think there's overwhelming evidence there was a connection between al-Qaeda and the Iraqi government. Wrong. Here are the facts. The 9/11 Commission report said there's no collaborative operational relationship. None. None whatsoever. Here's the exact quote from the Commission's final report. We have seen no evidence that these or the earlier contacts ever developed into a collaborative operational relationship, nor have we seen evidence indicating that Iraq cooperated with al-Qaeda in developing or carrying out any attacks against the United States. That's any, including 9/11. Any! 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, welcome to the program. You can drop into our chat room where there's consensus evolving. And it's some interesting conversation. Go to TomHartmann.com and click live chat. It'll drop you into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And if you have an AOL or CompuServe screen name and password, bang, you can pop right in. If not, you can get one right online. You don't have to put in a credit card or anything. It's free. You do have to put in an email address. That's to keep out spammers, you know, or to be able to lock out people if they abuse the chat room. But that's it. That's as far as it goes. Very, very simple, very easy to drop in, and, you know, more than welcome. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a few phone calls on this. What are your thoughts on this? George in, is that Manteca, California?
Yes, it is, Tom.
Hey, George.
Hi. I wanted to pay you a compliment first, and then I wanted to ask you a couple questions. Recently, I've emailed you. I know you probably get thousands of emails about Thomas Jefferson and redeeming his reputation, and I really think you've done that with your book, number one. And number two, I really think you're one of the few progressive voices that actually espouse Jeffersonian philosophy, which I think is wonderful.
Well, I'm trying to get more out there because Thomas Jefferson was the original progressive. He was the first. He was one of the first liberals, and in fact, George Washington and Jefferson both used that word a lot.
And that's so true. And I think that's what so many right wingers and other people are so ignorant of, that he was a true progressive. What I also wanted to ask you was two questions about the Republican Party. I listened to you yesterday, and I heard you say that if they were reelected, if Bush was reelected in 2004, that you thought it would be the demise of the Republican Party. That's the first question. I wanted to know, hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
The second one is this. When you look at the United States and you look at the Midwest, the Rocky Mountain states, and all these places that vote strictly Republican, I know they're very socially conservative people, and that's okay with me. I can tolerate their views, being a progressive myself. But what I don't understand is these people are mostly middle-class, hardworking farmers, ranchers-type people, and they're getting clobbered by the Bush administration and by all these high, the corporate America type thing, all the tax cuts for the rich.
Right. Why do they vote against their own self-interest?
Why do they still vote Republican? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah. Is it Thomas Rich, I believe his name? No, Thomas, what was his name? I'm forgetting the name of the guy who wrote the book, but there's a new book out called What's the Matter with Kansas? And in which the author really, and it started out as an article in, as I recall, either Harper's or The Atlantic. And he really digs into that and does an excellent job. And really the bottom line is that the right-wing spin machine has been so effective at basically positioning the conservatives and the Republicans as the champions of social issues that they've been able to divert the discussion away from economic issues. The thing that Franklin Roosevelt did so brilliantly is he said economic issues are social issues. His famous quote from his 1936 acceptance speech, July 27, 1936, in Philadelphia, when he was renominated to run for president. And he said, a famous judge once said, necessitous men are not free men. In other words, people who are hungry are not free. You can't say that people who are in poverty are free. It just ain't true.
And I would think that Thomas Jefferson believed the same thing.
Oh, absolutely, and was outspoken about it. The need for what he called the yeomanry and the plowmanry, which today we would call the middle class, yeoman, working class, plowman, farmers. Absolutely. But the cons have done just an absolutely brilliant job of pushing wedge issues and these social wedge issues so that the economic issues don't get discussed.
And let me give you a small example. I have a friend. He lives in Montana, obviously a very conservative state in a lot of ways, but he's just a worker. He works in the mines up there, and he's going to vote for Bush. And these people in the mines up there, they don't make very much money, and they get hammered by all these tax cuts for the wealthy, and how the corporations up there get subsidies for these mining corporations.
Oh, yeah.
He gets nothing out of it.
And Bush is cutting out any safety protections that he may have under OSHA as well. I mean, and under the federal old Mining Act.
It's mind-boggling. I was very interested in what you said yesterday about the demise of the Republican Party, because that's something I would love to see.
Well, yeah, let me get to that. Here's what I think is happening. The first time that this light bulb went off for me, frankly, was an op-ed piece that I read in the Wall Street Journal in which the conservatives were bragging to themselves about this. And this was about, I don't know, maybe a year ago. I shared it with our listeners here on the air, but, you know, it's a... And they called it the Santa Claus strategy, where the Republicans come into office... And they give, you know, they say, oh, you know, here we're going to give you a tax cut, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you that, blah, 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 blah. We're going to pretend like we're Santa Claus. We're going to borrow from the future generations. We're going to run the country into absolute massive debt in order to do this. Ronald Reagan started this. He invented the Santa Claus strategy, as it were. And of course, then Reagan got reelected in his second term. And so his second term, he had to raise tax. He raised taxes every single year in his last 4 years. And George Herbert Walker Bush had to raise taxes in order to prevent an absolute disastrous train wreck. And still, this year, we're going to spend $160 billion of our tax dollars paying the interest on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed in his first 2 years in office in order to make the economy look good so that he can get himself reelected. And so what the Republicans do is they wipe out the future for the present, take credit for the present, and then wait for a Democrat to come into office and have to deal with the mess. And George Bush has created such an absolute disaster here. It's such a train wreck. Our trade deficit, our fiscal deficits, our environmental problems, the absolute loss of infrastructure across America. We have bridges crumbling. We have roads falling apart. Our ports are not protected. We have chemical plants that are not protected. I mean, it just goes on and on and on that whoever is the next president is going to have to deal with these, and one of two things is going to happen. If Kerry gets elected, he'll deal with them honestly. At least he says he will. He'll take taxes back up to the point where we can at least begin start paying our bills, and we can move forward on these things. If Bush is reelected and he sticks to his no taxes thing, he's going to create a depression, a Great Depression, that's going to make 1929, 1930 look like a picnic. That's why I say, you know, he would be the end. It'll be the end of the Republican. But he'll go down as Herbert Hoover. I'm surprised, frankly, it hasn't happened already. We're that close to it. Thanks for the call. I got to move along, George. Thanks. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman with you. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard.
You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, Johnny was doing good last night. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Bob in Iowa is on the line. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Tom, thank you. You are a beacon of truth in a wilderness of lies.
Well, thank you, Bob. You too.
Well, Mark Twain summed it up. You don't have to remember what you've said when you tell the truth.
There you go. It's a whole lot easier than telling lies. I can tell you that. It's one of the.
I'm in a semi. It's really hard to hear. Yeah. I appreciate your show. We all need to get out and vote. I've been civically irresponsible for many years. Well, I'm voting this year.
Good on you, Bob. Well done, and spread the word and keep, you know. Keep it going there.
Great. I thank you for your show, Tom. I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Bob. Yeah, it sounded like it's tough there on a cell phone when you're driving a truck. I do appreciate the call, though, Bob, from Iowa. Assuming you were listening on Sirius satellite radio, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Richard in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Actually, this is Chris.
Oh, I'm sorry. Chris in New Mexico. Richard in Grand Rapids is next.
really briefly, something interesting that happened this morning, along the lines of what you were talking about a little earlier. Tim Russert of Meet the Press was on NBC this morning, and he, too, they were talking about the debates, referenced Cheney's quote about not having met John Edwards until last night. Tim Russert began laughing openly and said, you realize, of course, he was talking to Katie Couric, so you realize, Katie, that both of them were on Meet the Press together not too long ago.
Jeez.
And he said, maybe Mr. Cheney just forgot about it. But
no, Cheney is not suffering from senile dementia. Cheney, he was pulling facts out of his memory. He had been well prepped. Cheney is a very competent liar. He has been lying to the American people for several years. And you know, we're seeing it. And last night he got called on it.
Truth will out. You have a good show, man.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Richard in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, Tom, just a quick comment on the debate last night. I think that Cheney being caught lying about having never met John Edwards. Among other things. It's certainly symptomatic of what you say, which is absolutely correct. The man's a serial liar. But in the broad scheme of things, getting called on a small lie like that means egg on his face. But lying to get this country into a war means getting blood on his hands.
Yeah, you know the thing that I think is missing in all of this is Edwards and Kerry keep pointing out, and correctly so, the fact that Bush and Cheney lied to get us into this war. What nobody has had the either courage or willingness to speculate about is why did they lie to get us into this war. And I, frankly, I believe that the reason why nobody is willing to speak about it is because the reason is too horrible to contemplate. The reason is found in Bob Woodward's book, Bush at War. And it's right there in the book. You can read it yourself, where before the invasion of Iraq, Karl Rove shows up in Crawford, Texas, opens up his laptop with George W. and what's his name, Bob Woodward, apparently in the room, and brings up this PowerPoint presentation and says, I have your reelection campaign here. We are going to portray you, now I'm not quoting, I'm paraphrasing, we are going to portray you as a strong leader. In fact, the first screen and the PowerPoint presentation is a strong leader. And then, of course, you know, how do you get that? Well, you get that by being a war president, by declaring a war.
How craven is that?
Well, see, I am of the opinion that they thought they were getting a twofer. Number one, that George W. would look like a strong war president would get reelected. Mm-hmm. And number two, that we would secure the Middle Eastern oil that Iraq sits on, you know, at 10% of the world's oil supplies, as Dick Cheney loves to say, for ourselves. And therefore, the energy companies, you know, Cheney, a former energy industry CEO, Bush, a former oil company CEO, Condi Rice has a tanker named after her. The oil companies could just keep on going with their profits and you know, forget about the environment, forget about the ozone layer, forget about global warming, forget about, you know, forget about mercury in the air. But we're going to make some money on this oil.
And real quick, my wife works at the community college where Bush is appearing this afternoon.
Yeah.
She wants to carry a sign, and I said, hey, you might get arrested, you know, free speech zones and all that.
Yeah.
And she said, God love her, well, maybe it's time to get arrested then.
There you go. Well said, Richard. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Joining their union brothers and sisters in San Francisco, Chicago, and New York, more than 10,000 casino employees in Atlantic City are on strike. Members of Unite Here, Local 54, including baggage handlers, cocktail servers, bell captains, housekeepers, and others, walked off the job last week, forming around-the-clock picket lines along the Pacific Avenue Strip. Their contract expired 2 weeks ago, and the union has been unable to reach an agreement with management on keeping health care premiums low, stopping outsourcing, and establishing a contract length of 3 years. Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts averted a strike at its three Atlantic City casinos by settling with the union early. This helped Sands Hotel Casino, which signed a Me Too agreement, under which it would accept the first contract language reached. Union iron workers stood in solidarity with hotel workers by refusing to cross a picket line outside the Ocean One Pier Hotel. Owners announced they would be flying in replacement workers from Chicago and Las Vegas to keep casinos and restaurants open in one of the most densely unionized cities in the country.
Police officials across the country are calling for a backup from the Bush administration, but don't know if their message is getting through. The administration has stopped funding a Clinton-era program to put more than 100,000 officers on the street, calling the program a success. However, police officials have expressed concern that without the funding, they can't meet expectations in a post-September 11th America. Bill Johnson is the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations.
Police officers are being asked to do much more today than they were on September 10th. Police officers have to guard critical infrastructure, communications, bridges, tunnels, waterworks, power supplies, all things that before September 11th we didn't really have to worry that much about.
Johnson said that while funding for some of these new concerns have been set aside through Homeland Security, it just doesn't get the job done.
The dollars are not marked for law enforcement. They are marked for quote-unquote first responders, which is not very well defined. It includes law enforcement and also includes firefighters, ambulance crews, rescue workers, and so on. So you have a smaller pot of money, but more people competing for it.
He adds that with funding for the campaign to put more police on the streets drying up, there is zero new funding being earmarked by the government to allow for any new officers to be hired.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The AFL-CIO says under President Bush's plan to privatize Social Security, Wall Street financial giants would reap $940 billion over 75 years, while retiring workers would see Social Security benefits fall. That's according to a University of Chicago study. The report says that workers would lose 20% of their retirement income subsidizing financial fees under the Bush plan.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Promise. promise. Moonlight's dreaming, wanna make life gay.
Somebody say.
Hey, welcome back. Somebody sing, hey, regime change on November 2nd. By the way, in the at the beginning of the next hour, we're going to have on Sandy Liddy Bourne of the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is a group of 2,400 conservative lawmakers across the United States who are proposing legislation that's actually already been passed in several states that would make you a subject to terrorism laws if you sign a petition for Greenpeace. And they think that's just a great thing. We're going to take her on. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Before I go to the phones, I just have to share this one thing. Dick Cheney, one of the comments he made last night was, you know, when the Halliburton stuff was brought up, he says, well, I couldn't answer that in 30 seconds, which is, he couldn't answer it in 30 minutes. I mean, so he says, oh, you can go to factcheck.com. Well, apparently at the time, factcheck.com was a dead website. And according to the legend that I learned this in our chat room, so it may, or you know, I'm assuming it's the truth. But George Soros was watching and said, interesting, and he went and bought the website and redirected it to georgesoros.com. Because the reality is, if you go to factcheck.com right now, which is what Dick Cheney said to do, you will get a page that says at the very top, why we must not reelect President Bush. And then a headline, President Bush is endangering our safety, hurting our vital interests, and undermining American values. This is what you get if you go to the website that Dick Cheney promoted last night in response to the Halliburton question. President Bush ran on the platform of a humble foreign policy in 2000. If we reelect him now, we endorse the Bush doctrine of preemptive action in the invasion of Iraq, and we will have to live with the consequences. If we repudiate the Bush policies at the polls, we shall have a better chance to regain the respect and support of the world and to break the vicious cycles, writes George Soros. Factcheck.com now redirects to georgesoros.com. So do like Dick Cheney said. Go to factcheck.com, and you will learn all about his time with Halliburton. 1-866-889-8894. Max in Wisconsin on the line. Hey, Max, what's up?
How are you doing, Tom? I like your show.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, I watched that show last night. And that's what I call it, a show.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was.
Between Cheney and our future vice president. And I've come up with one fact.
Okay.
And the fact is, last night was not a win or lose situation. It was who was tried and who was convicted.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Okay. That's the way I looked at it. I looked at it as we were going to turn our radios on and our TVs on and say who won and see who wins and who loses.
Yeah.
I don't think so. That's not what that was about.
Well, you know, Max,
he was sent up there. You know, I have two semis. I have one parked because I can't afford to put the other one on the road.
Yeah.
And I have to drive this one.
Yeah, welcome to conservative economics. I mean, isn't this a great economy they brought you?
You know, I listened to our vice president though, and I was kind of in awe when I first turned it on, and I couldn't believe how he's beaten up. But I looked at it as then all of a sudden I turned around and said, well, this is not what it seems to be. This is not a debate. This is
the trial of Dick Cheney,
vice president beating up on not beating up. But this is a future vice president going after a vice president now that did everything wrong. He's lied, cheat, or steal. He's an habitual liar. This is a medical problem. He doesn't know. That's why he was so into this. That's why he was so.
Max, we've lost you. We've lost you, so I'm going to drop you here because apparently you've gone out of range on your cell phone. But spot on. In fact, two points that you raised that I think are really interesting. I thought, you know, I hadn't thought of it in the terms of this was the trial of Dick Cheney. And if you just watched the debate and that was the only context you had, you know, John Edwards kept correcting facts and saying, you know, basically, Mr. Cheney, you're lying to the American people. He called it, you know, deceptions and distortions and things. But you could have gotten the impression that maybe Cheney wasn't lying. But now what's happening is the American media is pointing out the liberal press and the conservative, even Drudge, pointing out that Cheney, yes, repeatedly lied last night, over and over and over again, and that Edwards kept catching him on it. And, you know, it's just fascinating, fascinating stuff. I hadn't thought of it in that context, and it certainly is. Ed in California is on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, great job. Two things here. I know I've seen Bush on television saying the difference between Cheney and Edwards is that Cheney could be vice president. And I know the right likes to take a lot of cheap shots. But here's one. Why have a man in there that can't stand for 90 minutes?
Yeah.
He has to sit.
Well,
and
yeah.
The second point is he so worried about a nuclear bomb going off in the United States because they haven't done anything with the nuclear stockpiles anyplace?
Well, not only that, they haven't protected any of our nuclear facilities, which could
not
be turned into nuclear bombs with a conventional weapon. They haven't protected any of our chemical plants, which could produce, I mean, you know, more people died in the firebombing of Tokyo than died in Hiroshima.
They protected oil plants in this country with the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
They gave it to them. Because I wonder why.
Yeah, gee, what a surprise!
Gee,
you know, Ed. One of the interesting things. There's a book out, and I read it about 2 years ago, and I frankly can't remember the title of it right now. But about corporate governance in the United States, and the author made this point that I'd never seen made anywhere before or since, frankly. And he asked the question, why is it if you believe the notion of about free economies and free markets, which I do, that supply and demand define price. In other words, if there's a lot of something around, the price becomes very cheap. If there's very little of something around, the price becomes very expensive. Okay,
yeah.
Why is it that the small handful of high level corporate CEOs, perhaps you know as few as 1,000 really in the United States, make salaries over $20 million a year, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, Eisner $800-900 million. What is in such short supply that would cause there to be such a small supply of these men and women available, mostly men, available, that you would have to pay $20 million to get them? And this author suggested that what is in such short supply are high-functioning sociopaths, people who are willing to ignore the consequences of their actions on other people who are willing, you know, like axe handle or chainsaw Al Dunlap, the guy who came into the razor company or in Sunbeam, you know, and laid off 10,000 people and then laughed about it, bragged about it. There's just like this very small number of people who are so calloused, who are so disconnected from the consequences of their actions that they can do that kind of a job. And if he's right, then, you know, Cheney fits that profile.
How much more can we give them?
Yeah.
How much more can they need?
I know.
The question.
It's,
and I can do the job for half the price.
But see, can you? I mean, that's the question.
Absolutely.
You would be willing for half the price, for $5 million a year, you would be willing to take a job that involves destroying the lives of tens of thousands of human beings?
Oh, not that. I won't.
Okay.
Do that.
See,
kind
you
of
won't.
Job.
So there you go. There you go. There's a very short supply of people.
That's
who,
right. I'm liberal. Wait a minute. Oh,
I think you're human. I think you're human, Ed. I think that's what it's.
It's not going to work, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Have a good day.
Ed, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 19 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Scott in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Scott, are you anywhere near 833 Fuller Avenue Northeast? Do you know where that is?
I sure do.
Are you familiar with the Fuller Avenue Church of the Nazarene?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I've gotten several emails about this thing, and one of them, this fellow says, why is it that the Republicans can point the finger at us black Democrats who believe in God, but they feel God is on their side and the IRS code does not apply to them? And specifically what he's talking about is that there has been heavy pressure on black churches not to get involved in Democratic politics this year with threats of losing their tax-exempt status. But apparently the parsonage, which is owned by the church of the Fuller Avenue Church of the Nazarene at 833 Fuller Avenue, has a Bush-Cheney sign out in front. And this guy has contacted everybody. And here the IRS tax publication 1828 says, under the Internal Revenue Code, all Section 501c3 organizations are absolutely prohibited from directly or indirectly participating in or intervening in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for elected public office. And he's wondering, you know, why? He says it's been 4 weeks and they still haven't taken the sign down. He's complained to the church. He's complained to the IRS.
I haven't even heard that story here.
Okay,
Grand
well,
Rapids.
I would love to hear from our Grand Rapids listeners if this is still going on. The church phone is 616-459-2773, and the IRS fraud hotline is 1-800-829-0433. And if anybody wants to, you know, if this is a topic of interest, we can pursue it. But anyhow, that's not what you called about, Scott. What's up?
Well, I'm a little bit perplexed at the caller's biggest concern over Dick Cheney's performance in the debate last night. And they point out two things, that Cheney actually did meet John Edwards previous to the debate.
On multiple occasions.
Yep, and that's such a big thing to Democrats in general. And another one is he couldn't stand up for 90 minutes.
Well, I frankly don't. I have not. You know, one person called and made that comment. I didn't even remark on it.
You're right. A caller made the comment.
Yeah. The fact, however, that Dick Cheney was willing to lie about having met John Edwards before in a way that was probably one of his most powerful attack lines for the entire evening.
But that doesn't compare to the lines that John Edwards was using.
For example,
spending $200 billion in Iraq. We haven't spent $200 billion in Iraq.
It depends on how you define it to spend. We have allocated $200 billion for Iraq.
No, we haven't.
Sure we have.
$120 billion. The rest was for Afghanistan and other efforts.
No, not true. $200 billion has been allocated for
the
Iraq.
War on terrorism, but he wants everybody to think that it's just for Iraq. He wants to tell people that troops went into combat without body armor.
And they did.
No, they didn't. Every single person in there had body armor. It's the front line that had the top-of-the-line body armor, and it was their support crew and the support personnel.
Scott, if this is true, why is it that all across America, why is it that all across America people were having bake sales to get body armor for their families, for their kids?
Because they all want, only the front combat lines had the body armor, but everybody wanted it.
Yeah, well, I would too if I was in a war zone, Scott. Come on.
Not only that, 90% of the casualties, when 50% of the casualties have been from the Iraqi forces themselves.
90% of the coalition casualties is what John Edwards said. You know, you're doing a great job here, Scott, trying to respin the Republican line, but it ain't working.
Well, it was better than John Edwards, who went out there and just started repeating verbatim everything that John Kerry said just a week before.
Well, it's the truth. I mean, why not?
What's the truth? I mean, what is the plan for Iraq? We're going to get out or we're going to stay in? Are we going to go after terrorists or are we going to wait until they attack us here in the United States?
Well, frankly, Scott, I think that it would be very irresponsible for anybody who's running for political office to say at this point in time that 6 months from now, here's exactly what I'm going to do. I think it would not only be stupid, it would be almost criminally irresponsible.
Certainly. And in 2000, when George Bush debated Al Gore, the question was asked, what would you do if something happened in America out of the usual? And you know what George Bush said? Well, I would contact my advisors, and I would take the best advice that they could give me.
Yeah, and that's what he did.
That's exactly what he did.
Yep, he got Dick Cheney, and he got absolutely insane advice from these former members of the Program for a New American Century, the neocons, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, and they are now all absolutely, totally, and thoroughly discredited. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan, also in Grand Rapids. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hello. I had questions on that church, but first a couple comments on that last caller. No, they do not get body armor because I have personally bought body armor for three of my friends serving in Iraq.
You can
look at the bill that George Bush turned down denying them body armor. And the bill he proposed cutting soldiers' pay. But secondly, is that church on Fuller Northeast or Southeast? Because I got to see this.
Northeast. The parsonage is at 833 Fuller Northeast. I'm not sure where the church is. I'm assuming it's nearby. If this is true, I'm very saddened by it. The Fuller Avenue Church of the Nazarene. Because when I was a kid, I mean, 7 from the time I was around 7 till I was around 11 or 12, I went to the Kendon Drive Church of the Nazarene. I mean, you know, it's the same church, right? And if these guys are playing with politics, I think it's a shame.
Well, I'm on my way right now. I'm a delivery guy, so I can go check it out. And if
cool.
If they saw the sign out there, I'll call you back.
Let us know. Thanks, Tony.
All right.
Okay.
Yep.
Talk to you later. 1-866-889-8894. Alan in West Virginia on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, can you tell me if Zakari was in Iraq before the war? Or was he lying, was the vice president lying about that, too?
Well, apparently nobody's really sure. I mean, the it appears that this intelligence report that's coming out indicates that maybe he was there and maybe he wasn't, but certainly he was not coordinating things with Saddam Hussein, and you know, it was apparent. Well, I shouldn't even say certainly. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, Alan.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Sure enough. I mean, let's just be straight about this stuff. Rich in Waterbury, Vermont, on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi. How you doing?
Great.
You know, I'm really troubled by the fact that Cheney didn't remember meeting Edwards. And I'm more troubled at the fact that...
Oh, he remembered it, Rich.
Well, if he didn't, I'm really got a problem with that.
Yeah,
if he did remember and lied, that's one thing. But if he didn't remember, he's going to be second in command again?
Yeah, we're talking...
And he doesn't remember?
It's either a pathological liar or willing to lie for money and power, which is, you know, as I said earlier, what, you know, in some people suggest is the definition of CEO for major corporations, number one. Or number two, we've got pre-senile dementia. And,
yeah,
you know,
and, you know, that's okay if you're working in a convenience store.
Yeah, but it's not okay if you're vice president. I agree with you. Rich, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call
now. Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Critics say that when we consolidate the media into fewer and fewer hands, it threatens diversity. Nothing could be further from the truth. Every demographic has different consuming habits. With 500 channels, we'll have one shopping network for Elvis memorabilia and another for the dogs playing poker crowd. Something for everyone. In this spirit, we billionaires are buying up the airwaves. If you're on a road trip from Kennebunkport to Crawford, you can tune into Rush the whole trip down. Just think, the same country and soft rock stations everywhere you go. And what we leave off the dial, you're better off without, really. Aren't you glad someone's protecting you from polka music? You're welcome. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes the billionaire!
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to...
This is the Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support a $1 increase in the minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year and annual increases connected to inflation.
$5.15 an hour, which is not even $11,000 a year if you're working full time, is really just a miserly sum, and it's not enough money really to live off of at all.
Elise Scouty Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
Just the sheer volume of signatures that are required to even put this to the voters as a question. It was a huge, huge hurdle. And we also have some political hurdles here. We thought we were going to be up against another amendment and some other lawmaking that was going on in our state capitol to try and prevent citizens from putting ballot initiatives that deal with the state constitution to voters.
George W. Bush opposes raising the minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry supports an increase.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
To lie takes a liar, it's to steal takes a thief. To lie to the whole world takes a liar in chief.
Or a vice liar in chief.
Lies, any lies, any lies.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Carol in Los Angeles.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you, Carol?
Good. I don't remember where I read it, but I think several times I read that Zarqawi was in the northern part of Iraq, that Saddam Hussein did not have control of.
You're absolutely right. You just reminded me of it. That was the camp up in the north that was in the area that was really theoretically, I suppose you could say, under the control of the Kurds. It was really under the control of the United States. We did not allow Saddam Hussein up there, and that's where that one camp was located. You're absolutely right, and that's where they suspect Zarqawi was. Yeah.
And it goes along with everything that they say as far as where they say that he gassed his own people. That was 15 years ago. They failed to say that.
Well, and the other thing that they failed to say is that those people were sort of in the middle of the war between Iraq and Iran.
Exactly.
I mean, go ahead.
And then they talk about the mass graves that they're finding. That's because George the First in 91 told the Shiites in the South
that if they rose up, we would support them.
Yes.
Yeah, and they rose up, and then we didn't. Yeah, and so they got mowed down. I mean, it was like we created that situation. Which justifies Saddam Hussein being a brutal dictator. But the world is full of brutal dictators. If we are going to redefine the job description of the United States as, you know, taking out brutal dictators, it's just simply not doable. It's just not doable.
The problem is that they don't tell the American people the whole truth. They tell them little tiny bits of it. And unless the people read on their own, they don't understand exactly what the situation was.
Yeah, and that's why we have to have. That's why we all have to be truth tellers.
Yeah,
we have to be radical truth tellers. We have to be out there saying, you know, this is what's really going on.
Well, thank you so much for being there.
Well, thank you, Carol, and I appreciate the call, and thank you for reminding me that it was the camp up in the north that Zarqawi was supposedly associated with, and that's what's still in doubt. But no, he was not associated in any way with what's his name? Good old what's his name? Saddam Hussein. 1-866-889. Final word here from Armin in Sarasota. Hey, Armin, just got a few seconds. What's up?
First, I'd like to say this lady that just called, we all eventually breathe the same air on this globe. So does that technically mean that we all, whether we want to admit it or not, support terrorists on the planet?
Yeah. And
further, Dick Cheney, in my opinion, last night, did you see his eyes and his facial expressions and his grabbing his hands and his fist? And
I did. He was Predator. He was Predator. It was Darth Vader. He was Predator. 2 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Thank you very much for being with us this hour. Stick around.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Joining their union brothers and sisters in San Francisco, Chicago, and New York, more than 10,000 casino employees in Atlantic City are on strike. Members of Unite Here, Local 54, including baggage handlers, cocktail servers, bell captains, housekeepers, and others, walked off the job last week, forming around-the-clock picket lines along the Pacific Avenue Strip. Their contract expired 2 weeks ago, and the union has been unable to reach an agreement with management on keeping health care premiums low, stopping outsourcing, and establishing a contract length of 3 years. Trump Hotel and casino resorts averted a strike at its three Atlantic City casinos by settling with the union early. This helped Sands Hotel Casino, which signed a Me Too agreement, under which it would accept the first contract language reached. Union iron workers stood in solidarity with hotel workers by refusing to cross a picket line outside the Ocean One Pier Hotel. Owners announced they would be flying in replacement workers from Chicago and Las Vegas to keep casinos and restaurants open in one of the most densely unionized cities in the country.
Police officials across the country are calling for a backup from the Bush administration, but don't know if their message is getting through. The administration has stopped funding a Clinton-era program to put more than 100,000 officers on the street, calling the program a success. However, police officials have expressed concern that without the funding, they can't meet expectations in a post-September 11th America. Bill Johnson is the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations.
Police officers are being asked to do much more today than they were on September 10th. Police officers have to guard critical infrastructure, communications, bridges, tunnels, waterworks, power supplies, all things that before September 11th we didn't really have to worry that much about.
Johnson said that while funding for some of these new concerns have been set aside through Homeland Security, it just doesn't get the job done.
The dollars are not marked for law enforcement. They are marked for quote-unquote first responders, which is not very well defined. It includes law enforcement and also includes firefighters, ambulance crews, rescue workers, and so on. So you have a smaller pot of money, but more people competing for it.
He adds that with funding for the campaign to put more police on the streets drying up, there is zero new funding being earmarked by the government to allow for any new officers to be hired.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. The AFL-CIO says under President Bush's plan to privatize Social Security, Wall Street financial giants would reap $940 billion over 75 years, while retiring workers would see Social Security benefits fall. That's according to a University of Chicago study. The report says that workers would lose 20% of their retirement income subsidizing financial fees under the Bush plan.
Thank you.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
When the candidates debate, remember who they're speaking for.
Under George Bush, we get tax breaks for sending jobs overseas.
John Kerry will end those tax breaks and create jobs in America.
Bush's Medicare bill gave us billions.
John Kerry will give everyone access to the same health plan Congress gets.
Bush is allowing us to keep on polluting.
The corporation's choice or the people's choice. MoveOn PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
The Hummer. It's not just for driving anymore. Indeed, you can now splash the essence of Hummer all over your body. General Motors, the maker of this massive symbol of automotive macho, has now licensed a new Hummer cologne, calling it the Essence of Adventure, and pricing it as high as $52 for a Hummer-shaped bottle of the stuff. The scent is advertised as being masculine with rugged and adventurous attributes. They go further, promising that this new fragrance embodies all that Hummer is. The Hummer is an absurdly expensive, gas-guzzling, low-performance, high-polluting, gussied-up chunk of automotive junk. What would that smell like? Besides, these days, I see many more women driving these behemoths than men. Forget the masculinity pitch. This thing is turned into a girly car. I suggest they'd do better with a perfume than a cologne, preferably one with the alluring scent of money. If it's a real man's car you're after, you want the International CXT pickup truck. Weighing 14,500 pounds, reaching 9 feet tall and stretching 21 and a half feet long, you could put a Hummer in the pickup bed of this honker. In fact, this beast will tow 20 tons and has to have air brakes to make it stop. Yet, it's got the luxuries you need, too. Leather seats, wood grain trim, a drop-down DVD player, and whatnot. Speaking of luxury, it gets only 7 miles per gallon, requiring about $130 each time you fill up its 70-gallon diesel tank. Then there's the price tag, up to $115,000 with all the options. That's pricey, but hey, it's a man's car. As CXT's marketing director says, this is not a soccer mom's vehicle. I can't see the wife picking up groceries with it. This is Jim Hightower saying, in a CXT, you can look down on a Hummer and say, mine's bigger than yours.
Larry King here with a question. You take vitamin E, but are you losing some of it before your body can use it? Well, now there's the advanced protection of Ester E, new from the makers of Ester C. Ester E's breakthrough form protects its antioxidant strength until your body's ready to use it. So, don't lose your E. Do what I do. Take new Ester E. Are you getting advanced protection from your vitamin E?
And now, look for new Ester E where fine vitamins are sold.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can...
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our chat room, 1-866-889-8894, our national toll-free number. Should people go to prison as terrorists if they take photographs of hog farms? Well, let's just stop right there. Sandy Liddy Bourne is the Director of Legislation and Policy for the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. Alec? Hey, Sandy, welcome to the program.
Hi,
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. Sandy, your group, which is heavily funded by corporate interests and some very out there, well-known conservative foundations, Castle Rock and whatnot, has helped draft legislation in a lot of states to stop what you call eco-terrorism. And there are folks who suggest that this would mean that if somebody takes a picture of a corporation engaging in a crime, in some sort of illegal pollution, or takes water samples and publicizes it, and the publicity causes that corporation to have to pay a fine to the government, that person who took that picture, took that sample, is guilty of eco-terrorism. Why would you promote such legislation?
That is not an accurate portrayal of the legislation. The legislation itself is designed to go after, in particular, those organizations that commit violent crimes on property. For example, ELF, the Earth Liberation Front, or ALF, the Animal Liberation Front. There have been a high number of incidents across our country the past 3 or 4 years. These crimes are not necessarily committed by U.S. citizens. Several times these have been European activists who've been flown over here. They're on a short visa, and they attack a construction park, a corporate facility, a genetically modified food laboratory, a biotechnology laboratory.
Sandy, I got that. Aren't there existing laws, number one, don't we have existing laws against trespass, against criminal destruction of private property? I mean,
excellent question. We have laws across the country at the state level for petty crimes, for trespassing. We do not necessarily have laws that can go after the organized forces that do this. So we modeled this particular bill after the RICO Act that we used to use for organized crime back when the mafia was in its heyday.
That we still use.
And that's to capture these organized groups that are very, very well funded by nonprofit organizations.
Okay, so one of the groups, for example, in Oklahoma. Oklahoma has actually passed this law. Mm-hmm. And Seaboard Farms is one of the groups, Mammoth Pig Producer. And apparently somebody had collected some water, polluted water samples from some activists. And Tom Liddy, the Sierra Club's Oklahoma chapter chair, says this legislation is retaliation for that. He says, by making such actions a potential felony, the law is designed to intimidate anyone who might want to take on the big corporate farms. This would put Aaron Brockovich in jail. It would, in fact, put Aaron Brockovich in jail, wouldn't it?
No, it would not, because taking photographs is not what we're looking at. We are specifically looking at the intent to commit
trespass,
a violent crime. If the photographs were used for an organization to go inside and set fire to the hog farm, then it should be used.
But this law specifically says
that
somebody simply trespasses.
And that's up to the state's attorney general to determine how to use that law. But if you actually read the actual language of the bill itself, you will see that it's for the intent to commit a violent act. In nowhere, we have absolutely no problem with protesters.
Sandy, why not use the RICO laws for that?
Facility. There's no problem with somebody, looking at a facility from the outside. But if you go and you trespass onto the property, and the pictures that you took were then used, and they're found to be in evidence, to be used to set fire to a laboratory, I don't think anyone in this country, after we have been hit by terrorists, would take that well. There's nobody, and this is where the Sierra Clubs, the mainstream Sierra Club member, understands that. They don't want their funds used to commit violent crime.
Sandy, the Sierra Club is aggressively working against you on this stuff. Here we got Bill Berkowitz in the Sierra Club working for change groups like this, Working Assets. Bill Berkowitz of Working Assets wrote this piece. He says, if House Bill 433 passes and is signed to law in Texas, another one of these laws that you guys put together and help promote, he says, animal rights activists could face jail time and a fine of up to $10,000 for taking taking pictures of penned animals on factory farms, writing a check to a group involved in peaceful protests or civil disobedience against corporate farms, or paying membership dues to an environmental organization involved in a corporate campaign.
Right, right. This bill also goes after those very same animal rights activists who trespassed and to a mink farm, let the minks go. Over 3,000 minks died in the surrounding forest, were hit by cars when they were gathered and returned, because the litter mates will.
But Sandy, that was a crime before your laws.
But you have to understand the amount of money that has been lost because of these single-minded activists.
Sandy, if you're the victim of a crime, you can sue those single-minded activists for not only everything that you lost, but you have the choice. You can put them in jail. Or you can sue them for everything you lost plus damages.
In most states, you could only put them in jail because the states only have a short-term.
Well, why not prosecute them under RICO then?
This is for actual violent crime. This is for actual destruction and violent crime. These are for the vehicles that were burned up in Virginia. These are for the homes that were being built and constructed in California. These are for the
Sandy, we already have laws against all
those areas that were burnt down. Fire and violence will not be tolerated in this country as a form of protest.
Sandy, fire and violence have not been tolerated in this country as a form of protest since the Civil War.
No, that's not the case. Why, if that were the case, how is it that these folks could come in and out, commit the crime, and leave? The state AG said to us, we don't have laws on the books to go after these.
We don't have laws on the books against people who set cars and houses on fire?
They only have a series of short-term petty crimes. You might get one arsonist. But if that arsonist is funded by an organization such as Al for Elf, then you have a whole strategy.
Then you can use the RICO laws.
Violence. It's an act of
terror. What's wrong with that?
We're absolutely supportive of the Sierra Clubs that go out there, that protest, that stand on the sidewalk, that are having the bake sales because
as long as they don't do anything that's actually going to lead to any action against these corporations, as long as the problem, it seems that what you're suggesting is if anybody is actually effective, and I'm not talking about effective in a destructive way, but effective in exposing corporate malfeasance, if they take photographs and those photographs lead to that corporation being prosecuted and having to pay a fine, under your law, they've committed a crime.
That's not the case. And if you actually read the language, that is not the case. Nobody has a problem with protesting in front of the corporate.
I'm not talking about protesting in front of.
Why would you even want to advocate that it would be acceptable or legal to cross onto private property and get and steal information? You can get that
because somebody on that private property might be committing a crime against we the people, Sandy. They may be harming my children. They may be producing things that are going to make my children sick.
Let me finish. That you can obtain that same information. Most corporations have to be inspected by government services. You can get that very information that you want by going to your local Department of Environment and getting under the Freedom of Information Act.
Sandy, I'm sorry, you're wrong.
Reports,
the Supreme Court ruled
like
back in the 80s in a case involving Dow Chemical Company that corporations have the Fourth Amendment right of privacy and they can refuse to be inspected unless those inspectors from the EPA can prove in advance that there's evidence of a crime.
No. There are very solid. You have to remember, I did work in an environmental agency. There are very, very solid laws out there that, particularly for any pollutants and things like that, there are very, very solid laws that have been written and put into place over the past 30 years that require inspection and things like that. The Fourth Amendment doesn't protect those corporations from inspection if they have to produce something, and the states have very strong laws on that. That's not the case.
You're not familiar with the case where Dow sued the. You're not familiar with the 1980s case Dow versus EPA.
I am. I'm familiar with a variety of things. I'm also
Dow sued.
With you the
in that case, you had actually the EPA came in. They showed up at Dow Chemical. They said, "We've got a whistleblower report." And Dow said, "Sorry, we have Fourth Amendment rights of privacy. You can't come in." So the EPA hired a private pilot to fly over their facility, took photographs, documented what appeared to be a crime, and Dow sued them and said, "No, we have privacy rights under the Constitution." Do you think that corporations should have human rights under the Constitution?
EPA should not have gone around the law. EPA and
so you think the law should the laws that are written to protect human beings should also protect corporations?
Okay. If there is pollution. I believe, and this agent and this association believes, that polluters must pay. And that's, you've got to understand.
But
that
you represent polluters.
Let me finish. Polluters must pay. Secondly, when you write a law and it's to be enforced, and if someone is producing something and it's clearly downstream, and there's all kinds of ways to trace chemicals and pollutants that are coming out into the air, it's very simple to find today. Our technology is extraordinary. And once you find that violation, by most state laws, the government can then go inspect. That's the way it works. When a nonprofit group encourages its members to commit a crime by trespassing to try and get information, and then they use that information to commit violence that can cause harm to the property and
Sandy, we have laws against conspiracy in the United States. We have laws against organized crime in the United States. There are already laws that exist. You know, Dennis Bartlett of your organization back in 19...
Not. That's that we would not have written
any
law if we had not found it. We were shocked and when we went around to the states and we saw that they could not prosecute these people who, for the most part, are not your average, these are not Sierra Club members, these are not United States domestic Sierra Club members. These people that are coming over and committing
Sandy, you've already made that point. You've
teenagers.
Already made your point. Dennis Bartlett of your organization said,
is not with our organization.
In 1997.
That was long before me.
And I quote, our members join for the purpose of having a seat at the table. He's talking about all the corporate members of your organization.
Right.
That's just what we do. That's the service we offer. The organization is supported by money from the corporate sector, and by paying to be members, corporations are allowed the opportunity to sit down at the table. You think that we,
you know,
the people,
we
should be represented?
We live in the United States of America, and we have a free market system. And the way you and I conduct business...
So you think that the laws of this country should be written by corporations?
Let me finish.
You have 15 seconds. I'll give you the last
word.
The way
you and I do our business in this country is we go in and we purchase an item. We conduct business with the private sector all the time. That is the way this country works. We have a free market economy. We have a free market democracy. And so we should have those corporations that provide the jobs to the union.
Sandy, we're out of time. Sandy Liddy-Born, Director of Legislation and Policy for the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. Thanks, Sandy, for being with us.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Orrick name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Orrick XL uses triple-walled, disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Orrick bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Or it cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Orrick XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuum.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry,
Mystery, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
In the good old USA, I'd just like to say, tomorrow's dreams are always coming true.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, let's, the second largest army in Iraq. One of the folks in our message board, actually, or our chat room, just pointed this out to me, and you're spot on right. The second largest army in Iraq, second to the United States. Well, you could argue the Iraqi army is the second largest army in Iraq, but at this point in time, there's a lot of dispute about what the Iraqi army is, who it is, how big it is, and whose side they're really on. So, speaking of the other than the Iraqi army, the second largest military force in Iraq, second to the United States, is not Great Britain, which has roughly 6,000 troops there. It is corporations, corporate armies, mercenaries. They call themselves security, private contractors, security services. Here we have corporate. This is, we're looking at the rise of feudalism. It is exactly what Thomas Jefferson warned us about 200 plus years ago, when he argued so strongly that in the Bill of Rights there should be an amendment that was a ban on commercial monopolies, here it is. Welcome to the world where we the people don't write the laws, corporations are writing the laws. It's mind-boggling. 25 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Listen, I spent 11 years doing biomedical research at the University of California, and your previous caller is absolutely dead wrong. There were a lot of times where the protesters would show up and argue, and the police would show up, and they put up a police barricade so they couldn't actually get into
You guys had the lab rats kind of thing?
Yeah, lab rats and chimpanzees and monkeys and what have you. And, not to argue the morality one way or another of that, but the bottom line was is there are plenty of laws. And your point about conspiracy and what have you are absolutely there. There were people arrested. And what they're talking about requiring in terms of new laws is rubbish, because this has been on the books for 30 years.
Well, they want to put this stuff under the Patriot Act, where you can be investigated even before you've committed a crime, sneak and peek investigations. I mean, this is
Yeah, I know, because I used to show ID in order to get into the hospital to basically say, look, I work here, I'm not a protester, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. This has been on the books for 30 years, 3-0.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Chuck.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Setting the record straight. Appreciate it. 27 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We can also get back to the discussion of the Cheney versus reality debate. I think that would be an interesting one. And one of the folks in the chat room says that he or she, not too liberal here, has just posted a photograph of that church that I was mentioning in Grand Rapids that has the Bush-Cheney sign out in front. You know, if the Republicans are aggressively going after, in particular, black churches in Florida, and warning them, you will lose your tax-exempt status if you do anything to help the Democrats. And, you know, maybe what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I don't know. Anyhow, Dave in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. It's very difficult for me to watch or listen to Mr. Cheney, and it has to do with the events of 9/11. I've now been studying a second book on the subject, Inside Job by Jim Mars, M-A-R-R.
Oh, yeah. I know Jim Mars, or I knew Jim Mars years ago.
Ah, well, he took a pretty realistic look at that. And you call for radical honesty, but it's at a level that most of the country doesn't want to hear. But there was a third plane that was supposed to be hijacked at the same time, and it was to target the building number 7 there at the World Trade Center. It got delayed for almost an hour because they needed a mechanic to check out some fuel pressure problem or something. And in the meantime, all the passengers on board that plane learned of the two that had just been hijacked and slammed into the World Trade Center. So when they did take off and got hijacked, they knew what they were in for.
Yeah, Dave, I got to wrap it up. I'm sorry. But we'll come back to this another time. Interesting stuff. I mean, you know, Jim Mars, his work on the Kennedy assassination, fascinating stuff. Some of it a little out there. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Joining their union brothers and sisters in San Francisco, Chicago, and New York, more than 10,000 casino employees in Atlantic City are on strike. Members of Unite Here, Local 54, including baggage handlers, cocktail servers, bell captains, housekeepers, and others, walked off the job last week, forming around-the-clock picket lines along the Pacific Avenue Strip. Their contract expired 2 weeks ago, and the union has been unable to reach an agreement with management on keeping health care premiums low, stopping outsourcing, and establishing a contract length of 3 years. Trump Hotel and casino resorts averted a strike at its 3 Atlantic City casinos by settling with the union early. This helped Sands Hotel Casino, which signed a Me Too agreement under which it would accept the first contract language reached. Union iron workers stood in solidarity with hotel workers by refusing to cross a picket line outside the Ocean One Pier Hotel. Owners announced they would be flying in replacement workers from Chicago and Las Vegas to keep casinos and restaurants open in one of the most densely unionized cities in the country.
Police officials across the country are calling for a backup from the Bush administration, but don't know if their message is getting through. The administration has stopped funding a Clinton-era program to put more than 100,000 officers on the street, calling the program a success. However, police officials have expressed concern that without the funding, they can't meet expectations in a post-September 11th America. Bill Johnson is the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations.
Police officers are being asked to do much more today than they were on September 10th. Police officers have to guard critical infrastructure, communications, bridges, tunnels, waterworks, power supplies, all things that before September 11th we didn't really have to worry that much about.
Johnson said that while funding for some of these new concerns have been set aside through Homeland Security, it just doesn't get the job done.
These dollars are not marked for law enforcement. They are marked for quote-unquote first responders, which is not very well defined. It includes law enforcement and also includes firefighters, ambulance crews, rescue workers, and so on. So you have a smaller pot of money, but more people competing for it.
He adds that with funding for the campaign to put more police on the streets drying up, there is zero new funding being earmarked by the government to allow for any new officers to be hired.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The AFL-CIO says under President Bush's plan to privatize Social Security, Wall Street financial giants would reap $940 billion over 75 years, while retiring workers would see Social Security benefits fall. That's according to a University of Chicago study. The report says that workers would lose 20% of their retirement income subsidizing financial fees under the Bush plan.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Don't stand by while democracy dies. Don't stand by, don't swallow their lies. Don't stand by till we lose the prize. You've got to open your eyes.
Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The property on Fuller Avenue Northeast in Grand Rapids is the church parsonage. This is an interesting question, actually. It's the house at 883 Fuller Avenue. It's owned by the church. It's next door to the church, next door to the Fuller Avenue Church of the Nazarene. But it's owned by the church. And out in front are these Bush Cheney signs. If the church owns the property, are putting political signs out in front of the parsonage, the residence of the minister, against the rules of the Internal Revenue Service? Is it a violation? IRS publication 1828 says contributions to political campaign funds are public statements of position, verbal or written, made on behalf of the organization in favor of or in opposition to any candidate for public office, clearly violate the prohibition against political campaign activity. Violation of this prohibition may result in denial or revocation of tax-exempt status and the imposition of a certain excise tax. We've had three people call. And one post a photo saying, yes, in fact, the parsonage at 833 Fuller Avenue Northeast in Grand Rapids, Michigan, actually does have Bush Cheney signs out in front. And I've got the Grand Rapids Assessor's Office has been contacted, and this property is owned by the church. So the question, if property is owned by the church and it's used for promoting political activities, does that put the church in violation of these laws? I suspect so. We'll find out. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And we have, this is incredible. We've got Victoria Jones on line 6, and I got Ellen Ratner on line 3. Victoria?
Yes.
Hey, Ellen?
Yes.
Hi.
We're here. We've decided to double team it today.
That's great.
The reaction inside the Beltway mine from, the road post-Cleveland.
Boy, I am so flattered. This is great. I mean, it's just... This is the Talk Radio News Services double service. Okay, great. Who's going to go first?
Victoria, you've been in the Beltway. I've been in Cleveland and now towards Pittsburgh.
Okay. So, Ellen, what's up with on your end there?
Well, on my end, I think that, you know, first of all, it's very clear, and the Democratic National Committee has put this out in and it's been on all the newspapers, well, on the television, all it's been in the newspapers. Cheney just did not tell the truth when he talked about when he had met John Edwards. Among other things. I think the Democratic National Committee put out the 10 top lies of him. And it's interesting, I just actually had lunch at a restaurant, and I spoke to the waitress. I said, what do you think of the debates? And she said, I just couldn't tell. I said, who are you going to vote for? She said, I'm undecided. I said, how are you going to decide? She said, well, I pretty much will decide who I think lies least, and that's who I'll vote for.
Holy cow.
She said, because they both lie. And that's how, I mean, she's a middle voter.
Yeah.
She hasn't yet decided who lies least. But I also think it's interesting. I have to be honest. I do think that although Edwards had the facts more correct than Cheney, I think Cheney, in terms of the American public, won the debate.
he had
not
the,
by much, but I think he did.
Yeah, it was my sense of it was that he had more of the I'm going to take you on. Well, actually, I've been saying for a couple of days now the Darth Vader routine, the you are mine, and the condescending patting on the head, and I'm president of the Senate and I haven't met you, and all these zingers, I think in those terms that was my sense of it. Although when it comes to the facts, I think it's pretty clear that that Edwards did a marvelous job.
Right. So we assessed it in pretty much the same way. The American people hear Cheney say, oh, Edwards never showed up, et cetera. I was on one show this morning where they played the Cheney comment about Kerry and the war and all that stuff. So I said to the guy, a very close friend of mine, a host, but he's a right-winger, I said, why aren't you playing the Edwards reaction? He just said, well, he didn't do as well. I said, to be fair and balanced, you got to play the Cheney reaction.
Yeah, but none of us in talk radio, Ellen, are fair and balanced.
Right.
I mean, I'm not even pretending to be fair and balanced. I have a political point of view that I'm promoting. And
right, of course.
Yeah,
but at least you're going to allow both sides to speak.
Yeah, although I'll yell at the other ones.
That's why we have trouble getting Republican guests on.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's not that you yell at them, honestly, and I'm not saying this to blow whatever up your, I guess you don't wear a skirt, whatever men wear.
My kilt.
But I will say that, unfortunately, you're very smart about how you take these guys apart, which is why they don't like to get on with you.
Yeah, we just, in the last, you didn't hear it, but the last half hour, we had on a woman from an organization that is promoting, a corporate-funded think tank that is promoting these eco-terrorism laws, that so that if you take a photograph, at least this is according to Working Assets, if you take a photograph of a hog farm committing some sort of crime and that hog farm ends up getting a fine, you are considered a terrorist. No. And, seriously. And this law was actually just passed in Oklahoma, and it's pending in Texas, and they're proposing these all across the United States, these so-called eco-terrorism laws. And she was defending the right of corporations to propose legislation, the right of corporations to promote legislation. We live in a free market society. And I said, what about we the people? What happened to we the people? But anyway, okay, Ellen, we've got your report. Let's go to Victoria for a moment. And Victoria Jones, I forgot which of you was where.
I'm in Washington, D.C. I thought the debate was close also, but I don't agree that Cheney necessarily had the edge. In one sense he did, but in the sense that he was constantly looking down, in the sense that he was clearly condescending, and in the sense that for many people who have had Edwards portrayed as a pretty boy, to finally, to some extent, come up against his formidable intellect and his excellent skills, which I think he used very well. I think that people came away with a highly increased favorable view of Edwards and of his abilities. And I think that may take a day or two to settle in. But a lot of this depends on the post-debate spin. Not even necessarily by, those in talk radio, but by those on the national news. Tom Brokaw last night just kept on and on and on repeating the same extremely pro-Cheney quote and not doing the same for Edwards. MSNBC declared Cheney a slam dunk winner, which was absurd. And so I think some of it depends.
But they had all changed their tune by midnight. I mean, I was up until 1 o'clock watching these things, and they were as the lies were being documented. NBC was the one who found the tape of
right.
Cheney actually saying 9/11 and Saddam Hussein.
And this is why it's any instant poll is difficult, although, of course, a lot of people didn't watch it. A lot of people only watched bits, and so the reality for many people will be partial. But I also think that even though I think this is an important debate, I don't think it's going to have chance to get the kind of momentum poll-wise that it would otherwise get, simply because we've got another debate on Friday that's going to take all... By tomorrow, the attention will be away from this and moving up to, Kerry and Bush debating again, of course, Bush is now expected to do better and blah, blah, blah. So,
he could have done worse, Victoria.
Yeah.
No, well, this is the thing. Because he did so badly, now, if he shows up and doesn't grimace, he's going to be declared the winner on Friday.
Well, we'll see. I have a question for both of you as competent news people and observers of human nature as well. I opened the program an hour and a half ago with the comment that back in the late 70s, early 80s, just putting on my psychotherapist hat, I was the executive director of a residential treatment facility for severely emotionally and physically abused children. And it's still there. It's the New England Salem Children's Village is what it's called in New Hampshire. And for 5 years, I worked with very abusive families and a lot of very, very abusive adults. And, you know, because you had to work with the families as well as the kids. And there's a certain pattern of behavior that I saw over and over and over, particularly in abusive males, in men who were particularly violent, verbally violent, emotionally abusive, where they would just slap down usually their wives or their children. And they would try it, of course, on us, you know, on the people who were representing their kids all the time, where they just try and slap you down verbally, and then they try to suck up you a little bit. You know, they'd say, well, thank you for saying something nice about me, and all of a sudden they're your buddy, and then wham, they're slapping you down again. And it's almost like there's no trackable affect. There's no consistent emotion. It's either attack or best friend. And that,
well, you know, Tom, it's interesting because when I was in mental health, we both have had some similar career paths, we always used to say, you know, when a rat goes through the maze and gets a piece of cheese, he stops going. Or when he goes through the maze and never gets a piece of cheese, and gets a piece of cheese, he doesn't go all the time. But when a rat sometimes gets the cheese and sometimes doesn't, it sets a situation of anxiety, and the rat always goes through the maze. And it's sort of like exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it looked to me last night, particularly in that moment when Cheney thanked Edwards for saying something nice about his daughter, and all of a sudden Edwards was smiling and almost giggly, you know, and that's what I've seen, you know, that's that moment when the abuser has asserted control in the positive. And it just, I got the sense that Dick Cheney was doing this, abusive routine, this emotional abuse routine. I don't know if anybody, you know, maybe it's just my background that caused me to get that sense, but I wonder how many Americans were just uncomfortable by that whipsaw that was going on last night.
I'm not sure that Edwards, I think he did smile, certainly when Arthur Cheney, you know, acknowledged him saying something nice, and of course Cheney said nothing nice about Edwards or to him or about the president, actually, the entire night, but I'm sure I suspect that is a weapon that Cheney uses.
Yeah.
To great effect, actually, in the way that he deals with people. I don't think it was that effective in this particular format, simply because of the way that it was set up, actually. But, you know, I found it interesting that the president was barely referenced at all. And the one area where I do think that Cheney had the edge in that we talked about Kerry's record too much. We should have been talking about Bush's record.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Kerry's record is not as the president. He's not the one who wants a continuation of his contract.
Yeah, Edwards kept saying the president and vice president, and I thought he should have said George W. Bush or the Bush administration or something like that and made it a little more focused.
He said they. I kept hearing him, and I thought that was very effective, just calling them they.
Yeah.
I loved that.
Yeah. Ellen, what do you think this is last night did by way of setting up Friday? And what are your expectations?
Well, I think that they are trying to come up with a model that they think will work on Friday, and this was the grand test. And that is definitely part of is out there in Washington, and I'm not there, but that's what I'm hearing, that they are trying to use last night as a model, and that's how they're going to, quote-unquote, train Bush. The other thing, it's interesting that Adam Sharon, who is a works with us, as you know, and is a graduate of this international school at Hopkins, so he thinks internationally, said that essentially he thinks the reason that Cheney won the debate is because Cheney appears presidential. He's had that presidential experience, and he probably runs the foreign policy for the entire, you know, Bush administration.
Sure.
So that that essentially you are having a vice presidential type candidate go up against a presidential candidate, and the presidential candidate will always look like he's winning.
Yeah.
And yet under this criteria, John Kennedy could never have won. because he looked like he was kind of Edwards-ish. You know, some of the foreign press has been interesting. Certainly the Germans are saying that it was a draw.
Yeah.
The Brits seem to be saying that it was a draw.
Interesting.
That seems to be the sense overseas that I'm hearing.
But see, Nixon, if you go back to the Nixon-Kennedy debates, and I actually did just about 6 months ago, I went through and actually listened to them all, pulled out some excerpts, and I did a show of little clips from them. Nixon never did what Cheney did, which was the slapdown stuff. Nixon just tried to defend ideas. I mean, this was 40 years ago, back when it was my idea versus your idea, not these slapdown things. Victoria, what else is going on in Washington, D.C. of consequence? Right now?
Well, the Senate Armed Services Committee has a hearing this afternoon in which we're going to hear much more about this report on weapons of mass destruction or the absence of them in Iraq. This was leaked last month, and the chief weapons guy is going to be testifying, among others, before the Senate Armed Services Committee, and I think that's going to be quite a lively debate.
Yeah.
Extremely lively, as a matter of fact. And that really is the main ball game in town today. I mean, it's spin from last night. That's what most people are doing. Most politicians are spinning, and then they zip off to vote on something, you know, make computer mouse, you know, the state animal of Maine or something.
Yeah.
And then they zip back and do more spinning. So that committee is probably the biggest hearing of the day.
Interesting. And Ellen, do you think that those committee hearings or anything really that's going to happen in Washington, D.C. or in the nation between now and Friday is going to affect the Friday debates?
I can't see it because it's often very complicated. I mean, any legislation is complicated, et cetera. By the time it kind of filters through the news cycle, unless it's something that has some star quality or something like that, I don't think it is.
But wasn't it interesting how what Bremer said yesterday, set the tone for the debate? I mean, it was Gwen Ifill's first quote.
Well, that's true, but that was so outside of the box of what anybody ever expected. And rumor has it that he's kind of on the outs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Bremer is writing his own history book.
Yeah, I thought I thought if they got elected, that he was going to replace Colin Powell as Secretary of State.
He's looking for a gig in the private sector where the real money is.
Yeah. Yeah. He's certainly burning bridges.
He ain't going to be Secretary of State anytime soon. I'm not thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Ellen, you were just wrapping up. We got about a minute left here.
Well, just that I agree with Victoria that I think that
Bremer, yeah.
Bremer is, I think he's at least toast for a few cocktail parties. I don't think he's going to be going to many cocktail parties in Georgetown in the next few weeks, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Now, how long he remains out in the cold probably depends on what he does, but he's not going to be welcomed into the fold. Of course, he's a Kissinger Associate employee. Or has been, and so that may open some doors.
That gets him a lot of power. Thank you so much, Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll see you again tomorrow. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A new report by the Human Rights Center of the University of California at Berkeley and the Washington, D.C.-based anti-slavery group Free the Slaves states that at any given time in the United States, 10,000 or more people are forced through violence to work in deplorable conditions for little or no pay. Kelly Ramirez has more.
According to the report, Hidden Slaves, Forced Labor in the United States, slavery occurs in at least 90 U.S. cities. About 46% of American slaves are engaged in sex work. Most of the rest are in domestic work, agriculture, and sweatshops. Laurel Fletcher of the Human Rights Center at UC Berkeley says three factors contribute to the use of forced labor.
The first is demand. There is a demand in this country for cheap, exploitable labor. Two, there's a lack of legal protections for workers in these sectors. And the final one, which is related, is a lack of monitoring. For example, domestic workers. The work takes place in the private home. Virtually no monitoring is going on.
Jolene Smith, director of Free the Slaves, says there are places escaped slaves can go.
We're fortunate that a number of homeless shelters and domestic violence shelters around the country have volunteered to take in victims of slavery and trafficking in the United States.
Smith says that people need to see slavery as related to other labor issues.
When we tackle the issue of slavery, we should also think of eliminating sweatshop labor and making sure that workers in factories have their basic rights. After that, the next sort of dot to connect is the right to organize. If workers are able to organize around the world, then the chances of them being enslaved are going to decrease.
The Hidden Slaves Report is available online at www.freetheslaves.net. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Kelly Ramar.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad. Now we're all in danger.
Welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's see, is it lost the screen there for a second? Ken in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. There's another church parsonage displaying two Bush signs in Grand Rapids.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Reformed Church parsonage is across the street from us, 1254 Union Northeast, which isn't far from the other church you talked about.
That's incredible. What's with Grand Rapids? I mean, we're on the air all over the country, and I...
Yeah, not only that, we've had our scary signs stolen from our lawn, so I'm suspicious of some of the neighbors that did it, but anyway,
yeah.
we replaced them.
Well, Ken, let me give you the toll-free number to the Internal Revenue Service fraud hotline.
Okay.
It's 1-800-829-0433.
Okay, good.
And apparently there was also a church that was at the Allegan County Fair, had a booth, and they were passing out Bush-Cheney signs.
Really?
You know, again, I'm all in favor of churches doing church stuff. Yeah. You know, I salute them. I'm not in favor of, and neither was Thomas Jefferson or George Washington or any of those guys, and nor is the Constitution nor the laws of the United States in favor of churches living off tax exemption.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if they want to lose their tax exemption, frankly, it's fine if they engage in politics. Yeah. But if they're going to say that we have to pay for their police services, we have to pay for their fire department services, we have to pay for their sewage services, or the access to it, the infrastructure of the commons, we have to pay for the roads that people use to get to their church, we have to pay for the commons of the telephone line, you know, all the things that are paid for with property taxes and other taxes, you know, and income taxes. If they're going to say that we have to carry their load of the commons, then I think it's appropriate for us to say, okay, then you can't participate in politics.
What about Jerry Falwell?
Well, there are people who are suggesting that Falwell has stepped over the line, and I believe, you know, I'm with them. I think he has on several occasions, and Pat Robertson as well, and I'm amazed that these guys still have tax-exempt status. But they've been very careful not to say, vote for George Bush. They dance around the issues. They go, you know, well, George Bush is against homosexual marriage, but they don't then add vote for George Bush. Here, in this case, we're talking now about two different church properties that have vote for George Bush signs out in front. This is, I believe, a clear violation of the law. And so, Ken, thanks for the tip.
Yeah.
Okay. Have a good one. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. This is something that I think we need to be paying attention to. I mean, this whole issue of special interest groups who are using tax-exempt status in ways that are inappropriate, particularly religious ones, but really right across the board, we need to wake up. We need to be paying attention to these things. So, you know, if you see something like this going on in your community, let me know.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Billionaires for Moment.
Now, it's time for this billionaire moment.
These have been tough times for most Americans. The economy has been in the toilet, and there's all this scary terrorism going on. But ordinary people have risen to the challenge and tightened their belts and paid more of the tax burden, while unions get busted and jobs outsourced and benefits cut. All so we billionaires could enjoy more wealth than ever before. Now, you're not going to hear it from Bill Gates or Kenneth Lay, but I want to take a moment to thank you all for your generosity and grace, for everything you've done just for us. And now I'm off to squander my obscenely large tax refund on another vacation home and my third yacht. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Joining their union brothers and sisters in San Francisco, Chicago, and New York, more than 10,000 casino employees in Atlantic City are on strike. Members of Unite Here, Local 54, including baggage handlers, cocktail servers, bell captains, housekeepers, and others, walked off the job last week, forming around-the-clock picket lines along the Pacific Avenue Strip. Their contract expired 2 weeks ago, and the union has been unable to reach an agreement with management on keeping health care premiums low, stopping outsourcing, and establishing a contract length of 3 years. Trump Hotel Hotels and casino resorts averted a strike at its three Atlantic City casinos by settling with the union early. This helped Sands Hotel Casino, which signed a Me Too agreement under which it would accept the first contract language reached. Union iron workers stood in solidarity with hotel workers by refusing to cross a picket line outside the Ocean One Pier Hotel. Owners announced they would be flying in replacement workers from Chicago and Las Vegas to keep casinos and restaurants open in one of the most densely unionized cities in the country.
Police officials across the country are calling for a backup from the Bush administration, but don't know if their message is getting through. The administration has stopped funding a Clinton-era program to put more than 100,000 officers on the street, calling the program a success. However, police officials have expressed concern that without the funding, they can't meet expectations in a post-September 11th America. Bill Johnson is the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations.
Police officers are being asked to do much more today than they were on September 10th. Police officers have to guard critical infrastructure, communications, bridges, tunnels, waterworks, power supplies, all things that before September 11th we didn't really have to worry that much about.
Johnson said that while funding for some of these new concerns have been set aside through Homeland Security, it just doesn't get the job done.
The dollars are not marked for law enforcement. They are marked for quote-unquote first responders, which is not very well defined. It includes law enforcement and also includes firefighters, ambulance crews, rescue workers, and so on. So you have a smaller pot of money, but more people competing for it.
He adds that with funding for the campaign to put more police on the streets drying up, there is zero new funding being earmarked by the government to allow for any new officers to be hired.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report. The AFL-CIO says under President Bush's plan to privatize Social Security, Wall Street financial giants would reap $940 billion over 75 years, while retiring workers would see Social Security benefits fall. That's according to a University of Chicago study. The report says that workers would lose 20% of their retirement income subsidizing financial fees under the Bush plan.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
When the candidates debate, remember who they're speaking for.
Under George Bush, we get tax breaks for sending jobs overseas.
John Kerry will end those tax breaks and create jobs in America.
Bush's Medicare bill gave us billions.
John Kerry will give everyone access to the same health plan Congress gets.
Bush is allowing us to keep on polluting.
The corporation's choice or the people's choice. MoveOnPAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Governor Jeb Bush is out to make his state of Florida the next Florida. In 2000, Jeb used such crude political tactics as illegally purging voter lists to help engineer his brother's 537-vote victory in that election. And now, here he goes again. As one peer of Florida's GOP establishment candidly puts it, a Democrat can't win a statewide election in Florida without a high turnout of African Americans. It's no secret that the name of the game for Republicans is to restrain that turnout as much as possible. The Orlando League of Voters can attest to that. This African American civic group has played a big role in turning Orlando from a Republican stronghold into a city that increasingly votes Democratic. Their reward for getting involved in the democratic process is to have Jeb Bush's state police suddenly come knock, knock, knocking on the doors of some 50 of the league's grassroots leaders. These leaders, mostly elderly black women, find it frightening to be confronted in their homes by armed troopers interrogating them about their electoral participation. They're not charged with any crime. Instead, police say they're investigating vague allegations that some voter fraud might have occurred in this spring's mayoral election. Yet Jeb's own state police honcho wrote in a May letter that, quote, there was no basis to support the allegations, and he declared this matter closed. But it has not closed. Police now say the chief's letter was poorly worded. And the intimidating in-home interrogations continue this summer as the presidential election heated up. Jeb's police action is creating a blanket of fear among the league's volunteers who worry that their perfectly legal efforts will land them in jail. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course Jeb says that there's no political motive involved, but when asked how long the Orlando investigation will go on, police say it might continue right through November 2nd.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him?
Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont, high up in the Green Mountains, which are not so green. It's autumn is coming. The leaves are all turning yellow and red. And the generally, the second week of October is the peak week for fall foliage, when all the leaf peepers come up from Boston and New York and whatnot, and it's happening. Anyway, welcome back to the program. I should throw in this caveat. I don't know why I have to say this, but I am not a Democrat. I am not, and I don't represent the Democratic Party. I have a lot of problems with the Democratic Party, frankly. In 2000, I voted for Ralph Nader. And I will not do that this year, I'll tell you. But I figured at the time that, Ralph Nader more accurately reflects my worldview, frankly, than either of the candidates did. And still does, with the exception of the fact that Ralph doesn't understand that in the United States we have a two-party system. We don't have proportional representation. And so when you go up against one of the two parties, you harm the party that you're closest to. And in my mind, the way to solve the problems that we're facing is not to launch a third-party candidacy that is going to end up splitting the vote, and you're going to end up with minority representation. Like we just went through this here in Vermont 2 years ago. We have a governor and an attorney general, or a lieutenant governor, who are both Republicans, and neither one of them got even half the vote, because there's a very, very strong, what's called here, it's called the Progressive Party. It's sort of the Vermont equivalent of the Green Party, and they got 25% of the vote. And the Democrats got, 35-40% of the vote, and what was left over went to the Republicans, but the Republicans got a few points more than the Democrats did because so many people had left the Democrats and voted for the progressives. So you don't end up with the most democratic outcome. So in my mind, the solution to the problem is to infiltrate one of the two major parties, take it over from within, and bring it back in the direction that you want to see. And this is what the conservatives did after Barry Goldwater went down in flames in 1964. And the conservatives sat around and said, what are we going to do? We're losing power. The Rockefeller wing, the moderate wing, the Eisenhower wing of the Republican Party was rising to power again. And they said, let's infiltrate it and take it over. And they did, ultimately, with the election of Ronald Reagan. Now, Nixon was not a conservative by today's definitions. Nixon was a conservative by the definitions of the 1960s. He was a more or less an old-fashioned Republican conservative. I'd say Everett Dirksen and Barry Goldwater were the real ones out there. So I throw out that caveat. I am not a Democrat. And yet, I think there's just some great points here that Phil Singer, a Kerry spokesman, makes that are worthy of repeating. I just, share them with you. You listen to the right-wing talk radio, you'll be hearing Republican talking points. Now, they won't tell you that they're Republican talking points. I'll tell you when I'm sharing talking points with you. These are from the Kerry campaign. But I think they're pretty solid. Bush claimed he has a plan for victory in Iraq, but Bush rushed to war without a plan, has no plan to win the peace. Okay. I don't disagree with that. Bush claimed Kerry doesn't understand the post 9/11 world, but Bush took his eye off the war on terror and Al Qaeda. Clearly, in fact, he even had the special forces pull out of Afghanistan and prepare for invading Iraq before Tora Bora. I mean, just as we were approaching Tora Bora. Bush got it wrong. Iraq is a terrorist haven now, while it was not before. Increasingly, this is becoming obvious. Bush says problems with the economy are not his fault. But he, you know, the guy's had 4 years. I mean, you can see the result of his economic policies. It's pretty conspicuous. Maybe, you know, maybe in the first year he could blame it on Clinton. But this Republican mantra of blame all things wrong on Clinton, it just doesn't fly after 4 years. I'm sorry. Time to suck it up and take some responsibility here, George. Bush says Kerry has supported higher taxes, but Kerry voted for or co-sponsored over 600 tax cuts, and Cheney supported higher taxes, including on Social Security. You know, frankly, I got to say, I think they're all playing games of numbers. A pox on all their houses. You know, clearly, you know, this Republican talking point about, you know, Kerry's support. I think that we should have higher taxes. I just, you know, and the reason why, well, because we're spending more. We shouldn't be in debt. It's just very simple. We need to have a national dialogue on this, and we already have to a large extent. The majority of Americans want Social Security. But it's socialism. But the majority of Americans want it. The majority of Americans want Medicare or even a single-payer health care system. But it's socialism. But the majority of Americans want it. That's what you get in a democracy. And if we want it, we want to have these services. We want, you know, roads that are paved. We want police departments where you dial 911, they show up. Fire departments where they show up. We want public education that works. It has to be paid for. And you don't borrow from your children to pay for it. They used to call that position conservative. Nowadays, that position is called liberal. Go figure. I consider it rational. Actually, for quite some time that was also considered a liberal position. And is again here. Bush attacked Kerry on the deficit, but Bush has taken us from a $5 trillion surplus to a $3 trillion deficit and has no plan to pay for all of his promises, you know, clearly. Bush attacked Kerry's health care plan with a charge, but ABC has called not true. ABC Network, they're starting to reach here, but yeah. Bush claimed he tripled Homeland Security funding, but that is false. Okay. So, the Democratic talking points. Who do you think won? What do you think is going on with all this? Let's take a couple of phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Sean in Salt Lake City, Utah is on the line. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm a new fan of the show. It sounds very level-headed.
Well, thank you, Sean.
Thank you. I'm actually... Go ahead.
No, you're the caller.
Oh, okay. I'm actually calling regarding the previous subject. I'm a person from I'm with a group called United Animal Rights Coalition, and what they were talking about is making basically more stringent laws and even a more of a deterrent for people to go in and expose the truth of the nightmare that happens inside factory farms.
Yeah. So now to let people know who might have just tuned in, what the previous topic was in the previous hour, about an hour from now ago, I was debating a woman who was with a group that corporate funded group that has proposed legislation which is actually passed in Oklahoma and is close to passing in several other states that would say that if you are working against corporate interests in a way that defends the environment specifically, that you will be considered an eco-terrorist and you can be prosecuted under the terrorism laws as opposed to the ordinary criminal laws. Right.
In broad brush.
I'm probably misrepresenting that in some small way, but I think in broad brush that's a fairly accurate description. And you have a problem with that, Sean. I had a problem.
Of course. So the term terrorist has been exploited since 9/11 to a terrible extent, in so much of an extent that people like me, who my entire intention is to expose the truth and stop the violence that's happening to billions of animals across the world, we're actually being painted as terrorists when our entire intention is to expose the truth about the plight of animals on factory farms to the American and the American people and the world who truly are concerned about the way the animals are treated wherever they are.
But Sean, under these new laws, if you expose something that's happening on a factory farm, that's actually a crime.
And
that company then is subject to fines or penalties. In other words, if their economic interests are harmed, if your intention is to harm their economic interest, then under these laws, you are a terrorist.
Yeah. And
you don't think so?
Well, I don't think I'm a terrorist. That's for sure. I do see the fact that they're trying to create, like I said, more stringent laws, yeah, and paint us as a terrorist.
This is the Nazification of America. I mean, this is the fascist takeover of the United States.
And I agree. And it's clear as daylight that their whole objective in doing so is to make sure that people like me or our organization, which is the Watchdog Organization, doesn't go in and doesn't show people what happens to animals on factory farms.
Now, on the other hand, Sean, you know, the point that she made was that there are, she said, there's these European groups, you know, like Greenpeace, who are sending in foreigners to burn cars and burn homes. And in fact, there have been. I mean, the Earth. She claims it's Earth First. I don't know, but that there are actually eco-terrorist groups out there. That is, there are groups of people who specifically believe that they're defending Mother Earth, and they're using violent means. So far, none of them have been, to the best of my knowledge, violent against humans, but certainly violent against property,
right,
to accomplish that goal or to raise publicity.
Right.
Do you have a problem with there being laws against that?
Well, as a person who advocates nonviolence to both humans and non-humans, I can definitely see how the public would be in fear of things like that happening. But two things. First of all, to my knowledge, and she was talking about specifically pig farms, and she's using all kinds of other bad things that have happened in the United States as examples of why this should go on. To my knowledge, myself and my organization are the only ones in the United States who have actually gone in and done an open investigation and exposed it to the media. And secondly, there was no damage done here.
Did you have to trespass to do that?
Yes.
So you broke the law.
We did break the law, and we went out and we said exactly what night we broke the law. But sometimes breaking the law is exactly what is needed. And Reverend Jesse Jackson said, and then, of course, I was never arrested, but Jesse Jackson said, it is indeed a great honor to be arrested for a worthy cause.
Yeah, I mean, Martin Luther King regularly broke the law.
Right.
You know,
Gandhi broke the law.
Yeah, what was Rosa Parks broke the law. You know, Plessy broke the law.
Right, and we were aware of the potential consequences of doing something like that, but we knew that's the thing.
You've got to, you know, a nonviolent protester has to be willing to take the consequences of breaking the law. In other words, they have to say, okay, this is the law, and they're going to break it, and they say I'm going to break it, and they are willing, and you are willing. Apparently, you are willing. Now, here's the thing: if the law against trespass says that you can go to jail for 60 days or 6 months or whatever, and you're willing to do that.
Right.
What happens when she comes in, when her group comes in, and they pass a law that says now that trespass is considered a terrorist act, and you can go to jail, you can go to prison for 10 years?
Well,
are you willing to trespass any longer?
Well, I thank God for organizations like the ACLU who will make sure that my constitutional rights aren't violated.
But this is now law in Oklahoma.
Yeah, it is, and I am aware that something like that would happen.
In large part because of a pig farm in Oklahoma that got outed by people like you.
Yeah, and it's sad that things like this are going on, and I hope that there are people brave enough to speak up on behalf of those who can't speak for themselves, such as the pigs who live terrible, miserable lives covered in their own defecation inside factory farms.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of speaking up for the pigs. I'm frankly even more concerned about speaking up for you and me.
Right.
Speaking up for democracy, speaking up for free speech.
This is a global issue when we're talking about factory farms who are doing terrible things to the environment.
Yeah. And they're setting us up for an epidemic. I mean, this H5N1 flu virus that's coming down the road as a result of factory farming. We've got some really serious health problems in the United States and around the world as a consequence of factory farming. There's a lot of good arguments against it. Sean, thanks for the call. We got to move along.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you
sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The White House calls it downtime, Democrats call it vacation, but no matter how you look at it, a CBS News tally shows that Bush has been at his Crawford, Texas ranch, Camp David, or his family home in Kennebunkport 254 days since his term began in 2000. That's about 40% of his presidency. Most studies show that working Americans average only about 2 weeks of vacation each year.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program.
I'm going crazy.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And is George Bush driving you? I don't know. Dick Cheney, I have not suggested that there's a connection between Iraq and 9/11. I think, you know, frankly, everybody's talking about the lie that he said about not ever having met John Edwards, when in fact, first of all, he's not presiding over the Senate every Tuesday. He's having a lunch with Republican senators. So he hasn't met probably most of the Democratic senators. And secondly, which, you know, and so that was just, it was a cheap shot. And it was a lie. He had met John Edwards. In fact, he'd sat with him, sat next to him on Meet the Press. We played a clip earlier in the program of Dick Cheney saying, you know, welcome Senator Edwards. I mean, you know, that lie everybody's paying attention to. But I think the bigger lie, of the many lies that Dick Cheney told last night, I have not suggested there's a connection between Iraq and 9/11, when in fact he has over and over and over again suggested that. NBC actually has the videotape of it, and they're playing it. Anyhow, let's go back to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894, 866-889-8894, our telephone number. People call up and they say, you say that so fast. So I'll slow down. Taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, number 12, how's life?
That's just fine, and I'm really mad about this thought police thing about having
churches lose their tax-exempt status, that they should engage in anything that can be considered political speech. You can imagine what would happen if, say, if Jesse Jackson's church lost their tax-exempt status, or Martin Luther King's church lost its tax-exempt status, or any church that advocates gay marriage lost its tax-exempt status. There'd be a maelstrom of cries of Nazism, abridgment of freedom of speech, abridgment of the freedom of religion. It just happens to be that when conservative churches are threatened with it, it's okay.
But see, that's what's happening, number 12. That's what's got me started on this thing, is that down in Florida, you have Republican operatives literally going to black churches, you know, white guys dressed up like FBI agents almost, going into black churches and saying, are you engaging in political activity? Because if you are, you're going to lose your tax-exempt status. They're putting them on notice.
It doesn't matter what the political affiliation is. There's a freedom of religion and a freedom of speech. There's not a taxed speech, and there's not taxed religion. And on both sides, it sucks, and it's unconstitutional. And if Jesse Jackson wants to say George Bush is no good, throw him out all day long in his pulpit, more power to him.
And you think that you and I should pay the tax bill for Jesse Jackson to do that?
I think, basically, if you tax all these churches, there are a lot of them are sitting on million-dollar pieces of property. You're going to put them all out of business. And there is a thing called the First Amendment. Freedom of religion and freedom.
I don't think you would put them out of business. You know, we've only been not taxing churches in the United States for about 70 years. Churches have been around forever.
I don't agree with it at all. I think on both sides there should be freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and, you know, I do not support
But if you call yourself a church, then you get freedom from taxes as well.
Pardon me?
If you call yourself a church, you get freedom from taxes as well.
I suppose there would have to be some sort of litmus test to actually have. You'd actually have a religious belief in the property. But when it comes right down to it, no, I don't agree with it. I don't think government agents or any other fear-based agency should go into these things and report them to the IRS, whoever they report them to. I think it's totally wrong. We need less government intrusion, not more, on both sides.
We're talking.
I'm pretty much an absolutist about this.
I think maybe you don't understand what I'm saying, number 12. I mean, I'm saying that if any group says we want to be exempt from paying taxes because we're doing this noble thing, we're doing religion, and it's such an essential part of the fabric of society. And so we all say, okay, that is essential to our society, so you don't have to pay taxes. When they stop doing that and start doing something else like involving themselves in politics, let them pay taxes. What's wrong with that?
Who's determining what the religious? I mean, you have things like gay marriage, abortion, and
the IRS is the arbiter of this. We've all decided that an Internal Revenue Service is going to be the arbiter of it. They get to decide what's religion and what isn't, and who's legitimate charity and who isn't.
That's totally wrong too.
Yeah. Well, see, somebody's got to do it, and it's not going to be you or me. So, it just
government.
Seems like
there you go. Government shall make a law respecting the establishment of religion.
But we're not talking about the establishment of religion. We're talking about the establishment of taxes. And number 12, I appreciate your point of view, and I am absolutely as much of a fierce advocate for free speech as you are. However, this isn't about free speech. This is about taxes. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. An Orrick Professional Air Purifier renews the air in a typical bedroom every 10 minutes. But how long does it take for a stick-style unit to do that? Well, they don't tell you. In fact, a leading consumer testing magazine says the most popular stick-style unit is ineffective. To clean the air, you must move the air. Try an Orrick free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Joining their union brothers and sisters in San Francisco, Chicago, and New York, more than 10,000 casino employees in Atlantic City are on strike. Members of Unite Here, Local 54, including baggage handlers, cocktail servers, bell captains, housekeepers, and others, walked off the job last week, forming around-the-clock picket lines along the Pacific Avenue Strip. Their contract expired 2 weeks ago, and the union has been unable to reach an agreement with management on keeping health care premiums low, stopping outsourcing, and establishing a contract length of 3 years. Trump Hotel hotels and casino resorts averted a strike at its three Atlantic City casinos by settling with the union early. This helped Sands Hotel Casino, which signed a Me Too agreement, under which it would accept the first contract language reached. Union iron workers stood in solidarity with hotel workers by refusing to cross a picket line outside the Ocean One Pier Hotel. Owners announced they would be flying in replacement workers from Chicago and Las Vegas to keep casinos and restaurants open in one of the most densely unionized cities in the country.
Police officials across the country are calling for a backup from the Bush administration, but don't know if their message is getting through. The administration has stopped funding a Clinton-era program to put more than 100,000 officers on the street, calling the program a success. However, police officials have expressed concern that without the funding, they can't meet expectations in a post-September 11th America. Bill Johnson is the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations.
Police officers are being asked to do much more today than they were on September 10th. Police officers have to guard critical infrastructure, communications, bridges, tunnels, waterworks, power supplies, all things that before September 11th we didn't really have to worry that much about.
Johnson said that while funding for some of these new concerns have been set aside through Homeland Security, it just doesn't get the job done.
The dollars are not marked for law enforcement. They are marked for quote-unquote first responders, which is not very well defined. It includes law enforcement and also includes firefighters, ambulance crews, rescue workers, and so on. So you have a smaller pot of money, but more people competing for it.
He adds that with funding for the campaign to put more police on the streets drying up, there is zero new funding being earmarked by the government to allow for any new officers to be hired.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The AFL-CIO says under President Bush's plan to privatize Social Security, Wall Street financial giants would reap $940 billion over 75 years, while retiring workers would see Social Security benefits fall. That's according to a University of Chicago study. The report says that workers would lose 20% of their retirement income subsidizing financial fees under the Bush plan.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, let me make the point. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let me make the point just very, very clear. The whole point of separation of church and state in the United States, the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of a religion in the United States, was not to protect churches. It was to protect the state from churches. When the tax code came along, when the income taxes and all these various taxes and, you know, blah, 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 when we started broadly having larger taxes and we said, okay, you know, there were some people who were saying, you know, what we're doing is so essential it shouldn't be taxed. For example, government. Government was saying that it itself should be exempt from taxation. And there is a variety of people who suggest that they should be exempt from taxation. The program I used to run, Community for Abused Children, it's exempt from taxation. Programs that are cleaning up streams, programs that are caring for wild horses that got away from slaughter, whatever. I mean, there's one of the things that you have to do if you want to be exempt from taxes is you have to petition the Internal Revenue Service. You have to say, okay, you guys who are the tax collectors, we don't want to pay taxes. And the reason we don't want to pay taxes is because we're going to do something that is vital. 501c3, it has to do with education, it has to do with health and welfare, or it has to do with religion. We're going to do something that is vital to democracy, that we all collectively have agreed, if I do this thing, then I don't have to pay taxes. Because it's such an important thing. We want to encourage it. And the IRS says, okay, cool. We will allow you to do that and not pay taxes. However, there's one thing you can't do. Because you are taking advantage of the government, you're taking advantage of a law, you can't participate in the making of the laws as an institution. Individually, of course, you always can. But as an institution, no, you can't. You know, as an institution, you may not play in politics. And it just seems rational to me. This is the separation of not just church and state, but in this case, the separation of church and state. But really, it's all nonprofits. It's frankly. So anyhow, the other point I wanted to make is the thing about the farming and terrorism and whatnot. This really ultimately also comes out to a larger issue, and that is, do we want to have corporations making the laws for the United States of America? Or do we want our laws to be made by representatives of we the people? Very simple, very straightforward. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'd like to make two comments about the economic recovery, but first about the terrorism thing and the ridiculously strict laws. Look at the founding of this country, what it was based on, breaking of laws. Look at the results
that doesn't
of the
make
Nuremberg
a,
trials, where we complained about people not breaking laws, standing up to their government.
Yeah, and you can say that all day long, and it doesn't necessarily make it right. I mean, the bottom line is that if you're going to break laws, you must be willing to stand up to the consequences of it.
But shouldn't those punishments also be proportional to other punishments, such as an executive who cheats and bilks people out of billions of dollars?
Yeah, well, that's the point.
He's not going to spend as much time as one of those person who takes photographs of a pig farm.
That's the point. These people are going after, you know, a pimple with a machine gun.
Yes. Anyway, about the economic recovery, I wish people would mention, and Bush keeps on saying this thing about the tax, what he has created is, it's not reduced taxes, it's actually a birth tax that's been created. When a child is born now, a child automatically has a bill of over $20,000 it owes the government.
Right.
And I wish we would talk about this birth tax. Additionally, the economic recovery is probably due much more in part to people refinancing their homes and going into greater debt. A Harvard study has shown such things.
Yeah, I've pointed that out several times on this program. And you see this. I mean, all you have to do is watch TV and look at the commercials. Yeah, the commercial for LendingTree.com, I think it is, or I forget which one it is, where the guy comes home and his kid comes in and says, "Look it, I just got accepted to college." And the guy goes, "Oh, isn't that wonderful? Ivy League." And, he's at the pawn shop turning in the silver and he's putting his car up for sale. And then his wife says, "Don't worry, honey, we're going to refinance our home and pay for college." And I'm thinking, this is the middle class throwing itself into debt for things that, you should be able to, in the United States, put your children through school, including college. Frankly, I think college should be free. You should be able to get a higher education without having to have people sacrifice their retirement.
Yes, and probably at least 3/4 of the recovery is due to that. What has happened, a lot of people have taken what they had as equity in their homes, where they actually had assets, turned them into debt by refinancing and took home equity loans out against that. And so they are in debt, which they weren't in before.
Right.
And so we've gone into greater debt, so is it really an economic recovery anyway? Because all of a sudden these people have, another decade of debt to pay off.
Yeah, and it's not. It's clearly not. And the other thing is that the government, the portion of debt that the government is paying interest on has dramatically been reduced artificially by Alan Greenspan lowering interest rates. And that was one of the big things that allowed them to kind of skate on by, that allowed corporations. I mean, he has so manipulated interest rates in a way that over a 5-10 year period is going to devastate the dollar, in order to make things look good for George W. Bush. And
I may make another point, too, when you're talking about the devastating of the dollar.
Go ahead, Jim.
There's some talk out there that really one of the major reasons for the invasion of Iraq was because the dollar is keyed off of oil
and
the dollar.
Yeah. And Saddam was the first guy to talk about denominating his oil in euros instead of dollars. And now the Russians
now
are talking about
it. If we control Iraqi oil, we can keep it in the dollar rather than going to the euro.
Yeah, and that was one of the major conspiracy theories that was floating around before the Iraqi invasion. And it still makes some sense to me, although I think that goes into the 2-for-3-for-4-for. In other words, that goes into from the Bush administration's point of view, the main reason why they wanted to do this was so that George W. would look like a noble war president and he'd have a victory that that would assure him re-election for four more years. Number one, Karl Rove laid that out, you know, before the Gulf War as part of their campaign strategy. Number two was going to secure oil supply for the United States because without this, you know, the oil industry executives realize the United States is running out of oil, and as long as we continue to drive big SUVs and consume and not save and not have economy, you know, we've got a problem. And so let's nail down our oil supplies, and then there were all these threefers and fourfers. Well, it'll help us secure the dollar. It'll help us, you know, blah blah blah.
Yeah, and actually, we also may lose the oil supply in Saudi Arabia, given that when Saudi Arabia just opened up their industry to outside contracts, they awarded many of them to China and none to the U.S. companies.
Yeah, well, and not only that, Saudi Arabia may not have as much oil as they've been saying. Back in 1987, 88, maybe it was 86, it was right in the end of the 80s there, Saudi Arabia suddenly, literally in a day, increased by a third their estimated oil reserves, and there's no scientific basis for it. Everybody in the oil industry does a wink-wink sort of thing when you talk about Saudi oil reserves. The reality is that the largest oil reserves in the world are probably in Iraq, not Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
So I read about that in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. So anyhow, Jeff, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I got to move along here. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Diane in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Hi. I did want to tell you that, that strange things are happening with signs here in Grand Rapids. The Kerry campaign has had just hundreds and hundreds of reports of yard signs that have been missing and destroyed. And they're actually charging people to replace yard signs because they keep ordering them and they just disappear.
Hmm.
So it's, you know.
It's not unique. Diane, let me reassure you somewhat. It's not unique to Grand Rapids. This is happening all over the country.
Oh, great.
My guess is that probably Republican yard signs are vanishing in a few places as well. But there seems to be this organized, I mean, really seriously organized effort to destroy Democratic yard signs.
And right. Well, they're not. The Republican ones are not vanishing in Grand Rapids. Yeah. But I also wanted to comment on what you said when you started out the first hour about Cheney.
Yeah.
And you've repeated it a little bit. I absolutely had that feeling. And when you started out saying that he's the country's abuser, that really rang true to me.
So you've seen that in somebody somewhere in your life.
I must have, because I became extremely uncomfortable listening to them, to him talk. And I actually, I'm sort of a student of language, and I was writing down the kinds of words he was using that were making me so uncomfortable, and they were very authoritarian. They were very like, I'm God and you're stupid. You know, I'm confident that, and the fact of the matter is, and it is a fact that, and all those just word constructions that.
Yeah.
Then we don't use.
Yeah, they're what Thomas Harris, the guy who wrote I'm Okay, You're Okay, and came up with this transactional analysis back in the 70s, used to call the critical parent mode.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I was watching with a whole bunch of people, and people were just like, it's Dr. Evil. You know,
yeah. It's Darth
Vader.
I
think you've nailed it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Diana. It's, I suppose, good to hear that I wasn't just hallucinating that, but it's a little scary for the country that that's what our vice president is about.
Well, you never see these people. You know, somewhere in a cave somewhere, there's someone like that running things, but they don't come out on national TV, and their languages, they're very hidden.
Or
when you actually get to see them. It's very strange feeling.
Yeah, and when they do come out, they're not confronted. I mean, Cheney has done a number of the morning news shows, and you know, you get these so-called journalists who are just desperate. I mean, they know that if they ask such a hard question that Cheney never will come back on their program,
right,
that the network will fire them and replace them with somebody who Cheney will talk to, and they're trying to protect their $500,000 a year salary, so they don't ask Cheney the hard questions.
And, yeah, well, I thought Gwen did a great job.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah. Well, she did, and bless her, she's out of public television, so you know, I don't think she's so concerned, frankly. But really, she wasn't the one who was confronting him. It was Edwards.
Oh, and he did a fabulous job.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so too.
And I looked at a lot of instant polls afterwards, and I registered on a few of them, and Edwards had won by a huge margin. And then when I heard the radio, it was Cheney. So I don't know where they're getting their polls, because everyone I looked at last night, had Edwards way ahead.
Yeah. Well, the Republican spin now is that the Democrats were disproportionately, multiple voting and doing dirty tricks on the polls, blah, blah, blah. But what's interesting is the Republican National Committee, before the debate yesterday, sent out an email to everybody on the RNC list. I happen to be on their list. I donated $1 to the Bush campaign. Actually, it was $5. It was their minimum contribution back, 6 months ago to get on their list. And, in fact, I'm a team leader. And so I get all this stuff. And they sent out this email saying, as soon as the debates are over, please go to all the websites that you visit and any websites for any TV news shows and take the polls and vote and tell everybody and write the emails and whatnot, telling everybody that Cheney won the debate. This was before the debate started. The Republican National Committee sent this mass email out to everybody. And today, the Republican spin is, Edwards did well in the polls because there was a concerted effort on the part of the Democrats to do. I mean, it's like the Republicans are so good at accusing other people of what they do. You know, it's amazing.
Well, I actually did get a handout with a list of polls, but they didn't tell me to vote for Edwards. They said, these are polls you can vote in if you want.
Yeah.
From the Democrats. So I guess it's the same thing.
Well, no, the Republicans were explicitly saying, tell the world that Cheney won. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but a phrase to that effect. You know,
no matter what he said.
Yeah, I mean, this is pre-debate. Anyhow, Diane, got to move along. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the call. It's good to
hear from
you.
Well, keep going.
Okay, and you too. Yeah, keep spreading the good word and keep your yard signs out there if you can. Brian in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. You got to speak up a little, Brian.
I just wanted to say one thing. I think Cheney was full of that... the living conditions that the animal activist was talking about, the hogs living in the farms.
That, one of those words you can't say on the radio. Yeah,
that's right. But the question I have is a couple times when they were talking about job numbers in the debate, Cheney kept bringing up this 1.7 million jobs created figure. And I wonder, can you elaborate on that? I mean, I have heard nothing that substantiates that.
Yeah, well, there are different ways of calculating jobs. And there is this, there's the household report and there's the, I don't have them in front of me. I'm forgetting that there's two ways that the Department of Labor calculates jobs. And one of them includes if you are self-employed, are you still there, Brian?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, okay. If you are self-employed, as in if you start mowing your neighbor's lawn, right? I mean, even if you do anything at all that provides you with any income whatsoever, then you're considered to be employed. Or if you have part-time employment that is not even 20, 30 hours a week like Walmart employment, but 5-10 hours a week, anything at all, then you're considered an entrepreneur, you're considered self-employed, and you're considered fully employed. And by that standard, and then also there's a funny number where if you were drawing unemployment and you're no longer drawing unemployment and a certain period of time has passed, then you're assumed to have found employment.
That's a created job.
Right. And so, somehow 5 years after or 4 years after a big drop in jobs, you see, or 3 years actually, I guess it would be, 18 months of unemployment in most states, and then the 6 month gap, 6 or 12 month gap, then you're presumed to be back in the workforce because they just decided that. And so.
Well, I think it would have been good for Edwards to illustrate that. If I'm correct, 150,000 jobs are needed each month just to absorb the new labor market.
Yeah, just to make up for population
growth. Which is less than 1.7, or is more than 1.7 million.
Yeah, now we're missing about 7 million jobs altogether compared to what Bush had promised. And there's no way around it. And the other thing that's very real and that everybody gets is that I don't even think unemployment is the big problem in the United States. It's underemployment.
Right.
It's the fact that the good-paying jobs are vanishing, and they're being replaced by Walmart jobs, and that is crushing the middle class of America. Brian, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 10 minutes before the hour, you're in the Truth Arena.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it.
And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartmann's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend a project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Billionaires for both.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Protesters are demanding we bring our troops home from Iraq immediately, but we can't do that. You see, the Iraqis are very hospitable, and the new leader we selected for them has asked our troops to stay. If we brought them home now, we would risk insulting our hosts. And then who would be there to keep an eye on things while we extract our oil from below their soil? And there have been complaints about American mercenaries torturing Iraqi prisoners, but who are you going to trust to soften them up so they can lead us to all those missing weapons of mass destruction? The government? Or a private security firm that can do the dirty work more efficiently for less money with less accountability? Privatization. It works. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Farmers in 17th century New England struck a steady balance between their community and the market, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Market forces dominate agriculture along with most other aspects of American life, too much so in the opinion of environmental historian Brian Donahue. He's written a new book called The Great Meadow, Farmers and the Land in Colonial Concord. Donahue says the market began to exert a heavy influence in 18th century New England. He says farmers were pulled by two competing forces. One was the traditional mixed husbandry of English family farms, raising livestock, crops, vegetables, fruit, and firewood. Farmers grew what the family needed, and maybe a little extra to take to market. The other force was the growing opportunity to earn profits by specializing in a few crops or commodities to sell. Donahue says it was agriculture as a way of life versus agriculture as a business, but he says Concord farmers maintained a balance between these forces through the 1600s. He says they managed their property with a sense of responsibility to their families and their community. These colonial farmers did manage a healthy level of economic growth while farming for many generations on the same land. Donahue concludes that this sustainable agriculture was framed by a number of social restraints, including responsibility to one's family, neighbors, and community, and the fact that most of what they needed had to be produced locally. Donahue says these early Americans had their faults, and he wouldn't endorse their Puritan social restraints, but he says the colonial farmers did manage to strike a balance between the market and their community. A balance, he says, has been lost over the last 200 years. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Mott's in our chat room says, hey, Tom, I've got the email from the DNC. It says the same thing about hitting all the online polls and such. Shall I forward it to you? I said, no, it's I'll believe you. I didn't receive it, but that doesn't mean it didn't come to me. I'm perfectly willing to believe that the Democrats did the same thing. In fact, I would be, frankly, I would think they would be remiss in their responsibilities if they failed to, particularly if the Republicans were. But, you know, welcome to politics. Let's go back to the phones. Paul in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, about those online polls, I know a little bit about those. On the official John Kerry website last night, on their blog section, they had about 30 different online polls people could go to and cast their vote. And I did a few. One was a television station in Florida and a newspaper. And, you know, like I picked out battleground states. And they were Edwards was winning practically all of those. Now, the GOP has the same. They can do that if they want, and I'm sure they do. So mainly I see this as a function of the enthusiasm of the base.
Yeah.
So that the fact that Edwards was winning all these shows that basically the Democrats right now, I think, are more enthusiastic about their chances than the GOP.
Yeah, they may not be numerically greater, but they're more passionate. That's a good point. That's a very good point. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Ann in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi, I did go after the debate on to the major websites to respond to their polls. Found it interesting, CNN, when I went on, it was like late last night, it was about 70-some percent to 20-some percent saying Cheney lost the debate. Today, if you go to their website, however, you find that question is gone and they've replaced it.
Oh, really?
And instead it tells you, asks you, do you think the result of the debate changed your vote?
Well, you know, and I think the reason for that is that they reset the question every day. They want there to be a fresh question every day so that you'll come to their website every day. And today's a different day.
Yeah, but they usually have it to where you can go back and find the poll results from the day before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And that's gone.
And it's totally disappeared. And last night when I was going around to those various websites, ABC's poll, I tried voting in. It wouldn't take my vote.
Interesting. Interesting. And I got to move along. I got to wrap up the show here, but thanks for letting us know about that. Fascinating stuff here. The electoral issue here, 27 days to regime change in the United States. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today, to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Mike Toth and Ben Birch for our archives, the folks in our chat room for showing up, to Jay for our music, and thanks in particular to you for listening, for participating, and to all of our callers. We'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S.